भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
All material changes and material progress taking place by the wonderful interaction of matter are under the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Events in the material world are not taking place blindly. One always remains a servant of Krishna and engages everything in his service. One is accepted as Jivan Mukta, a liberated soul even during his life within the material world. Because if you're seeing everything that Krishna is involved, Krishna is what's making it happen, and you don't see something else, you can take part as an instrument, then one is on the liberated platform. Right? But if you think, I'm doing this, then we're conditioned, we're bound. Does that make sense? So liberated means it's a matter of consciousness, not a matter of how much you're floating off the floor in your chair. Some like that. Okay? Generally, liberation takes place after giving up this body. But one who lives according to the example of Prithu Maharaj is liberated even in this lifetime. In Krishna consciousness, the results of one's activities depend on the will of the Supreme Person. Indeed, in all cases, the result is not dependent on one's own personal dexterity, but is completely dependent on the will of the Supreme. This is the real significance of phalam brahmani sannyasa. The soul dedicated to the service of the Lord should never think of himself as the personal proprietor or the superintendent. A dedicated devotee should prosecute his work according to the rules and regulations described in devotional service. The results of his activities are completely dependent on the supreme will of the Lord. And so the point is, one is dependent anyway. It's just the materialist doesn't see it that way. He sees that I'm doing the work, I'm making the result. Right? And so if the result doesn't come out right, that means it has to be someone else's fault. Right? Because we're never at fault, right? That's just, it's not part of the equation. Right? Or if we are if we are at fault, then we're at the center of attention because then we're feeling bad and everybody should feel sorry for us. In some way, we're going to be the center of attention. Either that we're controlling everything, or everybody should feel sorry for us. So, does that make sense? But here, for the devotee, because they see that, no, it's all happening by the will of the Lord. Therefore, in the execution of his work, then he's on the liberated platform, because he doesn't see things from the perspective that he's the doer. He simply sees, I'm the instrument. And so he's not the personal proprietor or superintendent. Right? He's just the servant. Right? Krishna is the one who is the proprietor. He's the one that's, by his will, everything's going on. And that's being carried out by the material energy. So we can take part of that system. So if that's seen, then so many nice things can be done. Because it's depending upon us, then it's up to how much intelligence and skill and experience we have. But if we're dependent on Krishna, then so many amazing things can happen. Like we see in earlier days that there'd be some devotees, they've only been a devotee 3 months, but they would have the conviction to go out and actually start a new yatra, not even a new temple. They go into, come to Europe, nobody's in Europe, and they come there and start something. Right, they start a temple and then from there expand it. And the 3 months in the movement. Right? Or going in America opening a new temple. They were in some place they thought it was nice, there were some nice people there. So they thought, okay, hey, let's go there. And they go there with no money, no facility, nothing. Right? They hitchhike down to the place, find some people, go do Harinam. Like that, sit in a place, people come by, what's going on, like this and that, and then they just ask, hey, we're looking for a place to stay, we're doing all this stuff, we're doing like this, we're Hare Krishnas, we're preaching about, God consciousness, and they say, wow, cool, you can come stay at our place, and like that, and then they just do until they have enough money from the book distribution and all that, the one person program, and then others slowly join, and then they hire a place, and then there you have a Hare Krishna temple. Like that. And so that's how they were all started. Like that. Not all we have to big that. It just started like that. That's how you start. Then as they grow, then you get big temple, you get this or that, so many things are happening, the community grows. So this is the point, is that when you see yourself as a servant, then something that you could never do according to your conditioning happens. Right? But if we're dependent upon my conditioning, you know, then how much are you going to get? How much your conditioning's worth? So if it's worth more, you'll get a little more. If it's worth less, you'll get a little less. But if you're simply a servant of Krishna, then what you can get, that's way beyond, you know, your standard arrangement. Does that make sense? Yes? Yes.
Regarding the term liberation,
right.
Is there a liberation without devotion?
Is there a liberation without devotion? You can get to a liberated platform without devotion, very, very hard work. But because it's only your goal, that's why it's so hard to get to. But if your goal is beyond that, then it's not a difficulty.
Then how to understand properly the term liberation? How Vaishnavas should understand it?
Means liberation actually means that you're situated in a relationship with Krishna. That's liberation. This other, where you're out of the material world but not in the spiritual world, it can technically be called liberation because you're on the spiritual platform. But because you don't have a relationship with the Lord, it's temporary. You know, so therefore we don't count it as something significant. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say, the valet in front of the 5-star hotel, right? So now fancy cars, a Bentley drives up, a Lamborghini drives up, and he gets to drive them around to the parking, you know, place. He's in the car like 30 seconds, 45 seconds, maybe a minute. Mm-hmm. But now can he claim this is, you know, mine? Yeah, I drive a Lamborghini. No, because it's just a few seconds. So in eternal time, the amount of time that someone's in the Brahman is practically nothing. So you're there for just, you know, a few moments and then gone. So you actually call that liberated. You know, like that. So that's the difference. Because for devotees, it's not a goal. Their goal is prema. Therefore, the platform of liberation is just, you're not involved in the material world. That's why you're involved in prema. So it's just a situation. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say, a poor person to have a fancy room in a nice hotel would be a goal. But for, let's say, a wealthy person or a high-level business person, it's just a situation. You know, mm-hmm. So that's the difference between the devotees and the impersonalists. For the devotees, it's a situation. Of course you're liberated, but who cares? It's about devotion to Krishna. While the impersonalists, that's their goal to get to there. You know, so. Nouveau transcendentalists. Okay, verse 52. Maharaj Prithu, who was very opulent due to the prosperity of his entire empire, remained at home as a householder. Since he was never inclined to utilize his opulences for the gratification of the senses, he remained unattached, exactly like the sun, which is unaffected in all circumstances. Purport. The word griheshu is significant in this verse. Out of the four ashrams, the brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas, only grihastha, or householder, is allowed to associate with women. Therefore, the grihastha ashram is a kind of license for sense gratification given to the devotee. Prithu Maharaj was special in that although he was given license to remain a householder, and although he possessed immense opulences in his kingdom, he never engaged in sense gratification. This was a special sign that indicated him to be a pure devotee of the Lord. A pure devotee is never attracted by sense gratification, and consequently he is liberated. In material life, a person engages in sense gratification for his own personal satisfaction. But in the devotional liberated life, one aims to satisfy the senses of the Lord. So he's seeing everything as in, we see the previous verse, how in connection with Krishna. Krishna is involved, Krishna is the result, Krishna is the doer. So then we're simply taking part as an instrument. So then what is that? How are we taking part? Right? Not for our own satisfaction, but for Krishna's satisfaction. So the senses are being engaged for pleasing Krishna. So that's then the point that's made. That's liberated. So that's not sense gratification. Right? The senses are engaged in serving the Lord, so that's not sense gratification. Senses being engaged for ourselves, that's sense gratification. Therefore, all the facility he had, all the opulence he had, that was all being used to serve the Lord. So it's a simple, it's a change in the consciousness. That's why it says it's not a change in your situation, it's a change in the consciousness. You adjust the consciousness, then all these things adjust. In this verse, Maharaj Prithu is likened to the sun, Arka Vat. Sometimes the sun shines on stool, urine, and so many other polluted things. But since the sun is all-powerful, it is never affected by the polluted things with which it associates. On the contrary, the sunshine sterilizes and purifies polluted and dirty places. Similarly, a devotee may engage in so many material activities, but because he has no desire for sense gratification, they never affect him. On the contrary, he dovetails all material activities for the service of the Lord. Since a devotee, pure devotee, knows how to utilize everything for the Lord's service, he is never affected by material activities. Instead, by his transcendental plans, he purifies such activities. This is described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Sarvapadi Vinir Muktam Tatparatvena Nirmalam. His aim is to become completely purified in the service of the Lord, without being affected by material designations. So here we see that the term is used material activities. So technically for such a devotee there is no material activities. Right? He sees things in relationship to the Lord. Right? So he's doing the activity to please the Lord, so it's a spiritual activity. But you're using material energy for the engagement. And it's an activity that others would consider they would be using it in their own way for their own purpose, so it would be sense gratification. So it would be a material activity. So here, when we see that they're talking about the transcendental position of the devotee and using the term material activity doesn't refer to their consciousness. It refers to the medium that they're using, in other words, the external energy. Does that make sense? You know, like they're cooking with material, with the elements of the external energy. So we would call that a material activity in this case. But because they're transcendental, they purify that activity. Because the activity is technically neutral. Cooking is a neutral thing. It's based on the metaphysical position from the primary creation of what the science of cooking is. Right? Then you're using the implements of cooking here and applying that. So it actually is a neutral state. Now you use it for yourself, for yourself it's called sense gratification. Use it to please the Lord is called devotional service. So the activity itself, we can call it material activity because you're using material nature. But it doesn't mean that it's as such mundane. Does this make sense? Because it's neutral. Generally when everybody's using in the world the material activities, they're using it for sense gratification. Therefore, we can say material activities meaning sense gratification. So we're talking about the materialists, we say material activities. We mean that they're only focusing on the material activities, the benefits that they'll get from it. Right? While for the devotee, they're performing the material activities, but they're engaging in the Lord's service, like it says, like the sun. The sun purifies even something that's not pure. Does that make sense? So if one can see with this, it makes it so much easier also to engage in organizational activities and engage people if you can see the difference between the consciousness and the activity itself. Right? Because to get something done, there must be a particular activity that is also performed. You don't perform the activity, you can't get a result. But it's not that you're performing the activity and getting a result that makes it mundane, right, or sense gratification. It's the consciousness. So one has to be able to distinguish what is appropriate action. It means what's the mechanical action and what's appropriate for the individual, right? Mechanical action or the science of it, how it's applied, that's the Brahman platform. That who should be applying it and that's applied properly, that's the Paramatma platform, or in other words, that of Dharma. Right? Does that make sense? But why are we doing it to please Krishna, Bhagavan? So when that whole thing is there, then the whole activity becomes transcendental. So the same activity, we can say, that binds the materialist because of sense gratification, the same activity liberates the devotee. Does that make sense? Because it's neutral. Right? Electricity can heat, it can cool. Right? Because electricity is not hot or cold. It's just electricity. But it can be used for heating or for cooling. So the mechanics of how things function with the jnana and kriya shaktis, right? That can be used either in connection with yoga maya to please Krishna, and it gives a transcendental result, you know, in prema. Or we can use it with mahamaya, and it'll bind us to the material world and simply increase material desire or lust. Right? Does this make sense? So it's Krishna's energy. That's what we're meaning. It's just his creation. It's a neutral state. Right? It depends how you use it that then defines what it is. That's how, when he mentioned before, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was saying, from the position in Vaikuntha, then the living entity looks at that material nature, that nature that's there, whatever it is, superior energy or inferior energy, but they look at it from the view of sense gratification. So what are they looking at? They're not looking at prema, right? They're not looking at fulfilling Krishna's desire. So they're not looking at the Ichha Shakti, right? They're looking at the Kriya and Jnana, means the situation and the activities and results in that situation, right? Who's involved? And they're saying that would be nice, because when you perform an activity, it gives a result, right? And in the spiritual world, those results are for Krishna. So it's going to be nice results. So we're thinking these nice results, these activities that give these nice results, I like that for myself. You understand? That's how situated in the spiritual world one can see the material world. Because it's how you see Krishna's energy. You see it connected to him, it's spiritual. You see it not connected to him, it's material. Doesn't matter where you're situated. Doesn't matter if you're dealing with superior energy or inferior, because the energy is just energy. That's the whole thing. So what's done with it, that's up to the individual and their consciousness. Does this make sense? If we can split this, it makes it so much easier to manage and organize things, because then you can see people according to their nature, what's the work that needs to be done, but at the same time, see to that the consciousness is proper. Because they do the work, the consciousness is not up to standard, then it's not actually that they won't get that much benefit. Of course, the overall, you know, you're organizing a festival, they do something even though the consciousness is not good, they will get benefited. But think how much more they benefit and how better they do the service if the consciousness is proper. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Too early in the morning? Too cold? Too early and too cold, too close to breakfast. I'm speaking Swahili.
Just quite early. Just quite early.
Just quite early. Okay. As it warms up, okay. Yes.
Maharaj, can you elaborate on what is the symptoms of a person doing like things for Krishna and person doing things not for Krishna? How we can like, how we can find it?
One's happy, one's not. Like I saw a picture the other day, on the airplane, right? They were had an article about the new public saunas, right? So then one of them, I think it's just down at the end of the Esplanade. Is that how you call it? Yeah, just down at the end, just when you hit the wharf there.
Yeah.
Then if they've had three pools right in the ocean, they're built there. So two of them are freshwater, one of them's purified seawater. And, you know, in the picture there's all people standing around, all smiling, and someone's there with thinking, I guess they must have gone in the seawater pool because they're taking a shower. But they all look cold. You know? But they'll be thinking, we're enjoying, but they're freezing. So you have to see what's the mood of the mind, what's the attitude. Because physically, you can't necessarily tell the difference. Right? So it's going to be in the qualities being manifest, how they deal in that situation. So if you see superior qualities, you know, you see these things, then there's a good chance that you're dealing with the devotion. You see inferior qualities, even though the action is proper, then you're dealing with definitely with material. Right? And if you're seeing superior qualities, the technique's not so good, just means they're not so good at that. And if you see inferior qualities and inferior work, then you definitely know you're dealing with something more mundane. So next time you do something, you can just put up a mirror and then watch. How am I doing? Good practice. I'd say putting the memory card into the camera. No. Awesome. Yeah, then you know it. Okay, it's devotion. Because it's the consciousness that makes the difference. It's the only way you can tell that is from the symptoms of the subtler symptoms. It's obvious if they're doing something gross like smoking a Havana cigar or something like that. That's material. Right? Okay.
Can you just elaborate more on that inferior and superior qualities? How we can.
Superior means that they're positive qualities, inferior means that they're negative. Mm. So that is what it says. That's how you do it.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I a little, yesterday, this Dharma Artha Kama Moksha, that's so much there in different levels. So, how would I say, could you a little explain the psychological way, why it's Dharma Artha, not Artha Kama? Easily, like, ISKCON lacks money. So, we tend to get to the Artha, and then we think, when that is fine, then Dharma, but it never, at least the history I have seen, has happened like that.
No. You see, when Dharma is there, Dharma produces Artha. Yeah. Artha is not produced on its own. We look at the materialists and think they're working, they're getting money, but they're actually only receiving the money in this life from the Dharma they performed last life.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a mistake to think, well, the karmis are making money, so we can also. Point is, you perform Dharma, then Artha comes. And especially because the point is, Dharma means you're following the rules connected to the Lord. And so, therefore, following His rules, then in the form of, He in the form of the rules being satisfied, that means Lakshmi being His consort is satisfied, therefore the material facilities that come from those rules are there. Because money and facility is just a form of the performance of an action. Right? If I have a house because I've acted in a particular way. Right? So therefore, if I'm dealing with Krishna as material energy properly, according to the Dharma, my duty is the Dharma, then the resultant facility that comes, then is good. Does that make sense? So this idea that it has something has to do with, no, money can just be made by doing the activities of making money. No, it's that you're doing, why are you doing that activity to make money? What's the purpose? So if it's not according to duties, then it doesn't work. Like you can see before, when there was so much preaching, so much Sankirtan, everybody was committed to the Sankirtan movement like that, there was the amount of opulence was immense. It means we haven't seen it since that time. Individuals may be having it because of their commitment in that, but as a society it was there. But as soon as then we turn to these modernistic concepts of, you know, political correctness and, you know, socially what we should do, you know, according to the karmis rules and all that, and popularity, vox populi, and all that, then immediately Lakshmi goes away. Why does she want to stick around for that stuff? You know, we're thinking, oh, we can get money without Krishna. Mm-hmm. And that it didn't work for Ravana. Why would it work for us? At least he was qualified. You know, he could chant mantras, he could impress people, he was powerful, he knew what he was doing. He was educated. So, therefore, that's the rule, is that the two go together. Where there's proper performance of Dharma, which is Krishna, then naturally then Lakshmi is present there. You don't have Lakshmi on her own. If you do, it's mundane and she's chanchala, she comes and goes. But with the other, then with Dharma, then because Krishna's there, then she's there. It's long lasting. Right? So as long as one continues in that way, that's what you see, is that these great kings, we don't see that they're monetarily going up and down, because they're always steady in their religious principles, so they're always steady in the volume of material facilities they have. The two go together. Then with facilities, then you can enjoy the senses. That's common. Right? Without facilities, how do you enjoy yourself? How do you enjoy lunch if there's no lunch? Right? You know, so that's why it's Dharma. From Dharma comes Artha. Only when you have Artha, then you could engage in Kama. Right? And then from engaging in the senses, one's not satisfied by that, so then one gets interested in moksha. And then after you find the moksha so dry, because it's not Krishna conscious, then again they could drop back to Dharma, doing religious activities, welfare activities. You see, it's very common, all the big Mayavadis and all these kind of impersonal philosophers, after they've been doing for some time, you see they always drop down to doing some nice work, good work, this and that, because it's just too dry. So they always drop down to doing that kind of thing. So they drop back down to Dharma. From that then comes Artha, then from that comes, it just goes in a cycle. So the devotee breaks that cycle by engaging it. He performs the Dharma to please Krishna. So bhakti is developing, he's on the liberated platform, but because bhakti, Dharma is there, Artha comes. So there's facility. But he doesn't use it for his own sense gratification, he uses it to please the Lord. And so because he's using that process of Dharma Artha Kama to please the Lord, he's already on the liberated platform, so moksha is attained. But because it's for Krishna, it doesn't go in this cycle. You just move on to the spiritual world, where that whole cycle of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha is stopped. You know, does that make sense? So samsara stops.
And the stupid question, but what is moksha for us?
Moksha for us means that we're absorbed in Krishna and not in material energy. So that means you're on the transcendental platform. The term we use in connection with devotees is Brahma-Bhuta. Moksha just means the situation of being on the transcendental platform. But Brahma-Bhuta, then we generally use that term. So the devotees are on the platform of Brahma-Bhuta, and the impersonalists are on the platform of liberation. Because in Brahma-Bhuta, then one has that attraction for Krishna. Well, on the platform of liberation, there's no attraction. It's just referring to the position of being beyond the material modes of nature. But when you have attraction to Krishna, then by the association of the Lord's associates, that will then bring you to the platform of prema. Then you can say, now one is actually liberated. Yes.
I have heard the opinion that in ISKCON most of the temples are actually struggling economically, and the reason is that Krishna does not want his devotees to be puffed up and to relax. Something to it?
Yeah, you could have that. If we're looking at it from that standpoint, then it should be that devotees see that I were only an instrument for Krishna, and therefore then they engage in those activities that will be pleasing to Krishna. The point is that devotional service is the only solution to all problems, so we have to take it through. We can't just, it's not that we should all sit around and feel bad, right? Because that's your technical thing that comes from there, but one has to be very careful, because then what can come after that is some kind of fanatic position. Means we see that historically, that's always how it works. You have some civilization, it rises up to some height, it's going very nicely, and then it collapses. And when it collapses, then they all sit around feeling bad about themselves and that they're so useless for a while, and then somebody comes up with some fanatic angle that this is the reason that everything collapsed. And then they take that up and it becomes very uncomfortable for everybody. So we saw that that's what happened with the what do you call it, the German Empire. When it collapsed, then you had the Nazis come up with this, you know, it was the Jews' fault, it's this and that, we're great, we would have won, but these guys, you know, created the problem, therefore we get rid of them, we'll be great again. And then it's a troublesome thing. The Ottomans also had the same thing. They were doing great, you know, and then it all fell apart. And then it's all because of the sense gratification, so if we're really, really strict and all that, and anybody who's not strict, then you just kill them, so you go on that war to kill everybody who's not doing exactly what I'm doing at this point. And so it just creates trouble. Does that make sense? I think that's called Wahhabi. It's a group, because you find that within Islam, Muhammad means broad-minded. Like the Ottomans accommodate any other religion, all that. But now with this Wahhabi, they don't accommodate even Muslims. You know, you have to be so strict like they're doing, otherwise then, you know, they'll kill you. So it's not standard. Most of them are a little bit more, well, not most, but there are those who are more philosophical and more cultured. So you understand? So you have to be very, very careful is that we look at it, oh, Krishna took it all away because of this and that, and then if we don't give the solution, that means just engage in Krishna's service, and then what are your duties? Do that, have the right attitude, like here, that's explaining what Preacher Morris has. Then we'll come up with either a fanatic, well, we have to do what, you know, the modern people do and all this thing, and we've been too fanatic all this time, so we're fanatically not fanatic. Right? And or you'll get the people that are fanatic, and then it'll come up and go, you know, like that again. No, but when we were like that before, when we were fanatic before, that's when everything was going great. And all this, you know, modern nonsense is what's destroyed it. So you're just going to get these political angles. But the point is, this pure devotional service is the only thing. That purifies everything. That's what it says here. Sarvopadi vinir muktam, giving up all upadis. You can't say, oh, we're Westerners, so we have to fit in. We were too fanatic trying to be Indians. We can't do that. That's not what Rupa Goswami is talking about. Right? His aim is to become completely purified in the service of the Lord without being affected by material designations. One may be in, you know, contemporary environments and these kind of things, but one's unaffected by them. Why? Because of pure devotion. If one's affected by them, and then thinks that through that material endeavor I will come to pure devotion, then that's one is badly mistaken. The only way to come to the platform of pure devotion is to practice pure devotion. Because bhakti is independent, it's not dependent upon karma. No, if we make this arrangement, then we can do devotional service. But we have to remember is that was the first discussion that Srila Prabhupada had with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. The absolute first. Was we can't practice this Krishna consciousness as long as India is ruled by the foreigners. As soon as the foreigners are gone, then we have self-rule, then we can be, you know, then we can follow the Vedic culture, we can do everything nicely. So his first point was, until this political situation is taken care of, we can't be Krishna conscious. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur then pointed out, it's no, Krishna consciousness is independent. It's not dependent upon these things. You can be Krishna conscious right now without political change. So all these things are political change. Using political correctness, it's political. Right? The modern approach to the Vedic, it's political. All these different things, oh, we can't do this, we have to use the Western culture, it's political. None of these things are based on the actual Dharma of the human being, and the dharma of a devotee, and the dharma of the things that the devotee engages in Krishna's service. You understand? These are an attempt at political solutions. They have not worked it historically. Right? Does that make sense? You know, Caesar had his more liberal view. It didn't work out for him. They killed him. Right? Then those guys that killed him, thinking, okay, now we'll be established in how, you know, the old world order. Then as soon as Augustus, you know, got a little bit of facility, he killed all of them. I mean, down to the last one, he chased them all the way to Egypt, right? And so then that was there. Then, okay, you know, he's doing all right, and he's established his, and then after him, the empire went down. That was it. Yes.
Babuji, namaskar. This is, you know, I really appreciate the way you described, you know, how the political perspective can come and destroy our bhakti. There is this perspective among many people who say that Lord Krishna, who established Dharma, he had to take up, you know, Mahabharata. In a political way, that he had to venture into a war in Mahabharata to establish Dharma.
Right, and so your business partner is going to wage a war like in Mahabharata. I don't understand what the point is.
The point is, you know, from bhakti perspective, if you see that bhakti is independent of political setup.
Yeah, but what was the war for? What did the war accomplish? Did it establish bhakti or remove 640 million people who are making trouble on the planet?
Did it establish peace at the end of the war?
Peace? How do you define peace?
Maybe peace is when there is establishment of dharma and there is no dharma.
Yeah, but dharma, but how did they go about it? Arjuna, did he perform his dharma? Bhagavad Gita, it opens with Arjuna not wanting to do his dharma as a kshatriya and just go to the forest. Mm-hmm. After Bhagavad Gita spoken, then what did Arjuna do? Did he follow his dharma or not?
He followed his dharma.
Yeah, so it's a religious war. It's not a political war. Mm-hmm. Maybe Duryodhan is political, but how did that work out for him? Mm-hmm. And Arjuna, the Pandavas, they're fighting a religious war. Mm-hmm. Means according to religious principles. Mm-hmm. Right? They as kings are supposed to rule, and they're not given the position to rule. They're the ones that should be ruling. And the other person is simply, based on their own greed, is trying to fight. Mm-hmm. Right? Because he just wants to get rid of all opposition so he can just enjoy the kingdom on his own. It has nothing to do with dharma of him being a kshatriya. It's just he wants it. Because if he was following the dharma of his position as a kshatriya, he's younger than Yudhishthira, therefore he as a kshatriya should assist Yudhishthira in being the king. So it wasn't, it was just greed. It had nothing to do with religious principles. So you're just establishing religious principles. Right? It doesn't mean that kshatriyas, as part of their religious performance of religious duties, don't work with politics. But it's in support of dharma. But what I mentioned before, those things, where's the dharma? If I say political correctness, then what dharma am I establishing? The dharma of what? You understand? That's the whole point. So that's why we're using the term political. Things are political. Because they aren't for establishing dharma. Mm-hmm. They themselves were thinking that is the thing, and then we're taking something political. See, is that from dharma, that's something that Krishna enters into. He is dharma. But artha and kama only become pious when they're connected to dharma. Right? So I say I'm using them for Krishna, that means you connect them to the dharma aspect. That's offered to Krishna. Because why would we offer a dharma to Krishna? Right? Does that make sense? So they only have importance in their connection to Krishna. That makes sense? Like the science of cooking, that's there. Krishna is that science. Now if you cook for him, then he is that. But you cook for yourself. Right? Then how is he involved? Mechanically, maybe. But on these higher principles of devotion means to the person, not the Brahman. So how is Krishna involved if we only mechanically follow the science but don't do it to please him? Right? And so what are we going to offer to him? Why would you want to offer him something inferior when something superior is available? Now if we don't understand that, then that goes back to Mataji's position that she mentioned, is that we're too proud. Therefore, we think whatever I do, that's special. So I'm a devotee, whatever I do is devotional, therefore I think we should do this according to my conditioned nature, therefore it's automatically spiritual. And if someone tries to bring up philosophy, oh, that's just theory, we're being practical. But if the practicalness is to please Krishna, are we actually pleasing Krishna by trying to please ourselves? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So we have to be very, very careful to be able to understand what's the difference. That's why we see this levels of five levels of consciousness. They're described throughout. Taittiriya Upanishad is famous for this. And Prabhupada quotes this so many times. The Acharyas quote it. You have to know these levels of consciousness. Otherwise, how do you know what level of consciousness you're working with? So Artha is at the level of Pranamoya, which is the economic platform, which is where the politics are. Because what are people politicking over? Money. Does that make sense? That's why people politic, is to get personal gain. You understand? So you have to know the context, not just see the word and then say.
Thank you.
Yes.
Well, can you explain this karma-artha connection from the viewpoint of long-term and short-term?
Long-term what and short-term what?
Yeah, I mean, it said that like European wealth is, it's sometimes said that it's connected to the Christian dharma followed previously, but it seems that it's pretty long time ago, so I was just wondering that, is it there?
Well, let's say like this. Were Europeans following Christian dharma in the Middle Ages?
Yes.
Did they have much money?
No.
Okay. Now, when personalities like Ponce de Leon and these Wallace got in their little ships and sailed across the ocean blue and then met civilizations there that were thousands of times richer than them, and then they took all their money and brought it back to Europe, at that time did you notice that Europe had more money?
Yes.
So now, join the dots. You know what I'm saying? So, the whole point is yes, if you're religious, things do go better. But it's not necessarily that the money that was gained was good money. And so therefore, bad money has a tendency to spoil, even if someone's religious. So the religious principles were there, but how long? Now, when they were getting that money, then at the same time, you also see that the Protestant Reform movement started. So it's all at the same time. And so that was breaking down the authority of the church, the authority that the individual doesn't require the church, they can just deal with God themselves. So it brings the devotion simply down to the sentimental point, and there's no parampara anymore. So it's not a complete system. Does that make sense? So the whole point is yes, people have things and things go nicely because of religion. And as they give up religion, then you see things go down. At the same time, as they also have to know what is religion and how to practice it. So that's why the Vedic literatures give the most scientific approach and understanding of religion and how to practice. Does that make sense? Yeah. So now, what do we find in history books? Somebody doing something great, some empire coming up, some empire being destroyed, some, you know, always something that's more interesting for, you know, on the gossip platform. Right? So the Middle Ages, then people just did their religious duties and all that and all that. So then for 1,000 years, basically, that's all they did. So nothing special happened because people weren't too avaricious, they weren't too they weren't so materialistic, so everything just went on very smoothly. Because it went so smoothly, then The modern man calls that the Dark Ages. You know what I'm saying? Because if we look at it, you take the music from that period or the architecture from that period and things, it's all considered nice stuff. So why is it just, they'll just say nothing happened for 1,000 years. Right? The farmers just grew their crops and everybody else just did their thing and went to church and, you know, got married, had their families and made no politics and everything went very nicely. So therefore we consider it the Dark Ages. It's not like something was lost. Right? Did you hear anyone from the Dark Ages saying, you know, have you found Jesus? They didn't lose him. They had him the whole time. Right? So they knew that. It's after that that he got lost. You know, they've been trying to find him since. Right? You understand? Someone has to see what's going on, because we take, oh, this incredible opulence, it can be. But then the point is then how more closely you're following the Dharma and these things, then it goes nicely. So at least they had a peaceful time. Right? There weren't, you know, so many major wars and this and that. There was minor stuff. An English war where, you know, the big war of this or that, the battle of this and that, and if you look at it, there was, you know, 50 people from this side and 100 people from that side. That was the great battle of. It's always very interesting. Well, over in China, they have a battle and, you know, 100, you know, million people or 70 million people die in the whole thing. But, yeah, that's over in China. But in England, hey, you know, 150 people, you know. Okay? Yeah. So there are so many things are there. You follow religion, things are maintained. You don't follow, that goes down. So, things were okay. Because all the big universities started at that time. That's what they called medieval universities. You know, Oxford, Cambridge, Paris, Bologna. They were all medieval universities. Right? The system of study was way more than now, as we explained yesterday. The course was 18 years. Right? Now, even if you got a PhD, you can do that in like 7 years. Some degrees a little more. And that, to get that, it was 18 years. So it just depends how you look at it. Okay. Text 53. Being situated in the liberated position of devotional service, Prithumaraj not only performed all fruitive activities, but also begot 5 sons by his wife, Archi. Indeed, all his sons were begotten according to his own desire. Purport. As a householder, Prithumaraj had 5 sons by his wife, Archi, and all these sons were begotten as he desired them. They were not born whimsically or by accident. How one can beget children according to one's own desire is practically unknown in the present age, Kali Yuga. Right, so why we bring this up now? So we can see the process of what we're going through, why we chose the verses in the way we did. Because unless you know the philosophy, how will you understand this? Right? So as we get into detail, if we start with detail, thinking, oh, we're being practical, we'll start with detail, then we'll only see detail. We won't see how to apply the philosophy and maintain pure devotional service while we're applying that detail. Right? But if one understands all that, how he could deal in all, like, up to the previous verse, then there's no problem. Right? Yeah, okay, he's seeing everything connected to Krishna, he's engaging his senses in those situations to please Krishna, and so therefore, yes, he's on the transcendental platform and everything like that. Then, once that's understood and the principles of it are understood, then you can get into details. Right? And so now he has 5 sons. and begotten according to his desire. It means what kind of son he wanted, that's what he got. Does that make sense? That's the point. Because you're following like that, therefore you follow the mechanics of this process, you get what you're looking for. Don't have this consciousness, don't follow this system, then you end up with who knows what. Right? Do you have, I mean, most, you know, how you say, most places then they'll always have the kind of joke that the child is so different from the parents that sometimes one of the parents will, you know, bring up the point is, you know, did they get switched in the hospital or something? Stuff, yeah? Like that. You don't have that here? Yeah. So, why is it? Because the child is so different. But here it says, according to his desire, then he has a child that he wants. So, he, in other words, Peter Mars and his wife Archie never brought that up as a joke. In this regard, the secret of success depends on the parent's acceptance of the various purificatory methods known as samskaras. Right? So sometimes we'll go, okay, you know, this gets thrown into the process that we're devotees, we chant Hare Krishna, we don't need the rules. Same time, so we just chant Hare Krishna. Why are we having children? Right? I thought we were chanting Hare Krishna. Does that make sense? So the point is, since we're doing these things, then we do according to the rules. Right? When we chant Hare Krishna, there's no rules about Hare Krishna. But when it comes to begetting children, there are rules. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So there's some scars. The first samskara, the garbhodana samskara, child begetting samskara, is compulsory, especially for the higher castes. It's not that you can do or not. That's compulsory. You want a Brahmana, Kshatriya, or Vaishya, you have to do garbhodana samskara. You don't do garbhodana samskara, you will give birth to a Shudra. Guaranteed. It's science. That's why it says in Kali Yuga everyone's born Shudra, because who in Kali Yuga follows garbhodana? Now, after being born as a Shudra, then by association and training, they can move up to a higher level, or they can move down to a lower level, you know, as is the common standard. So even in these Mlechan Yavanas, their child is born in a superior position to them, but by their association, then they become, you know, good, you know, how you say, card-carrying, flag-waving Mlechas and Yavanas, right? Or people who are following these higher positions, they don't use garbhodana, and the child, then they can start to bring them up. But the problem is because of the nature, it's harder to bring them up. That's why then it's said that you have the samskara, then according to that, then the child is born in that position. Parents of Brahmins, generally you'll get a Brahmin, Kshatriyas, like this. Does that make sense? Because that's by nature. Now, if someone's a devotee family, they'll get a devotee. If a living entity is born in a devotee family, they will be a devotee. Because they were a devotee in last life. But now, what kind of devotee they were in the last life, that's up to you. Because remember, why are they taking birth again? Because they were great acharyas and fully absorbed in Krishna at the time of death? No. So, what do you want? You know, do you want someone who is more serious than this and that, but somehow or another, you know, there was some weakness, and so therefore then they have that strong principles of Krishna consciousness, or the devotee who, you know, does his own thing, doesn't care for authority, doesn't like the Vedic culture, doesn't like anybody, criticizes everybody, has their own idea about anything? You want that one as a kid? Because if they take birth again, that's an option. That's why garbhodana. Then it purifies the nature and everything like that. Because you don't have to worry. Someone will give birth to that devotee. You don't have to worry. No, but we have to be compassionate. There's plenty of people that aren't worried about these samskaras. They'll find a place. Don't worry. You don't have to be in anxiety. Okay. The first samskara, the garbhodana samskara, child beginning samskara, is compulsory, especially for the higher castes, the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas. I stay in the Bhagavad Gita, because remember, in the Gita, when it mentions Brahmas and Kshatriyas, it says these are the qualities under which they work. Right? So they have to have these superior qualities. Otherwise, how do they perform these functions? But when it comes to Vaishyas and Shudras, did it mention any qualities in Gita? No, it simply says what the work is. So that means they could be a business, they can be a dairy farmer, they can be do agriculturalist, they could be a banker or a you know, a tradesman, a businessman. Right? Does that mention any qualities? No. You could be an absolute demon and be a fabulous businessman. But if you're a demon, then you can't actually be a good Brahmin or Kshatriya. You understand? So that's the whole point, is that for these two, it only mentions qualities, because their occupations will function whether they have good qualities or not. Right? They can't have qualities that are opposed to doing their work. You know, if someone's just a sense gratifier and he's a businessman, he'll spend all his money, so he won't have investments, so then he will fail. Or if the artist is just too nasty, no one wants to work with him, even though he's the best. Just at some point, no one wants to work with him anymore. Right? You know, it's just like how you say, you have the term here that's used generally in a kind of negative connotation, that someone's a prima donna. You have that? Because prima donna means, of dancers, they're the best. There is no one better. But why are they called that? Because of being a prima donna, they just drive you nuts. That seems to be a major part of their occupation. And then, while they're at it, they also do some dancing. Because they can't drive you crazy unless you hire them, and you're only going to hire them because they're good at it, so you have to be able to dance good, but the reason for them is to harass. That's the reason. Hence, prima donna. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, sex life, which is not against religious principles, is Krishna himself. And according to religious principles, when one wants to beget a child, he must perform the Garbhodhan Samskar before having sex. So, in other words, having a child according to religious principles, that's Krishna. One's just having sex because one wants to have sex, that's not according to religious principles. The potency of that's also Krishna. But as Cupid. But it's just his desire. But it's not that he is that process. Right? So that's the difference. He'll be the power behind it in either case. But he takes on, that means those qualities take on that religious nature because of the connection to Krishna. Right? That's the difference here. That's why then, if it's Krishna, then you're having something special. The mental state of the father and mother before sex will certainly affect the mentality of the child to be begotten. Right? So that's the whole thing. What is their mentality? That's then what carries through. And the child is made up of that combination. So, since there's so many living entities that could enter the womb, that living entity that has that combination of that kind of mentality, that's the one that will enter. If the womb is purified by the Garbhodhan Samskar, that means only a purified living entity will come. Then, to do that means the consciousness of the parents have to be purified. That will attract, therefore, someone with that purified consciousness. Right? So, first of all, someone of a higher nature, and then within that, that specific nature of the parents. Does that make sense? It's a science. Because the point is gross comes from subtle. So the concept of the parents within the heart, of their mentality, right? Because the heart's the mind and the is in the heart. That's where it's first conceived. So the child's conceived of actually from the heart. Right? This is a mechanical process how you get the child, but the what's the nature of that child, that's conceived of in the heart. Right? And that's then what manifests the gross form. Does that make sense? It's a science. We don't like to break this down into science because it's sacrosanct, because we're trying to have some fun and stuff like that. So therefore, then, you know, it's a topic that no one wants to discuss, right? Which is so fun in the West. being totally into sex, you can't talk about sex. About someplace like India, which is not about all this, oh, you know, how you say, overt sex, then you can discuss it very, 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 you know, scientifically. Go figure. Yes.
The TV news was just not long ago. They were introducing shocking news. They said, you know. So what is this in the terms of our devotional terms? They said that the sex life has gone in Finland dramatically down.
It's gone down.
Down. Yeah. Meaning, like, you know, technically.
Maybe that's why education's going up.
Yeah. So is it like that Kunia is out, or?
There's no relationships. There's the ideas that before is that you're going to be happy through sex. You know, like means earlier it was about your performance of your duties, so you had sex to have children. Then it was, no, the free society, do what you like and all this and that, that, you know, by having sex everyone will be happy. And since everybody wasn't happy by that, then you know, the relationships and all that being broken down, now everyone just gets into their occupation, their career, and stuff like that, or they're realistic and just get into the proper duties of family life. So either way, it just goes back to a balance. All these things there, we always think of, no, it's growing, it's going to be like this forever. No, it's a cycle. It just goes up and it goes down. It disappears. It goes away. So it's not that, you know, we take it that, oh, this is what's here now, this is the future, this is going to be. No, this is just where it is now in the cycle. And the cycle changes. That's why we don't want to put our faith in these modern political platforms, because they change. In a moment, they just change. Something happens, people's mentality changes. Just, you know, one thing happens and then they change. You see, that's going on all the time. People are going, okay, this and that, this is good, this is that, why we're so strict, you know, we should be more liberal. Then something goes wrong. And then everybody suddenly pulls back and wants to be conservative. You know, it's just the way it works. And so, but the idea is, no, it'll be eternal, it'll go on forever, and that. But it doesn't.
That they keep in mind. They said in the TV, 8:30 in the evening news. They said marketing is up, marketing is stronger than ever. But they said reality is downer than ever.
Yeah, but then the point is that why would marketing be up, because now people have brains that they can use to make money. So, you know, the focus is there. So the Vedic is, that's why Artha works, is because you're performing your Dharma, then Artha is there. Right? And if children are needed, then you're involved, there's a process. You use the process, it works. So that's what it's for, everything, just like you eat when you're hungry. Right? Sometimes you have in between, you have false hunger. In between, you kind of feel like you'd like to eat something, but as soon as you start eating, you find out you're not hungry. So that's all the modern focus on sex is they think, you know, that it's necessary, but it doesn't make anything any better.
And they also, there's like this step, you know, for the whole state, the worry is that last Finn, I think, will be born, was it 2067? So they don't give birth either. They don't have interaction, but they don't also give birth. Of course, that's quite natural. But the thing is that it affects to the level that the immigrants and all that, whoever, you know, has to be welcomed, just for the sake that there are no even.
Yeah, no, so many countries are like that.
Yeah.
But then that's the whole point, is those who have a culture, who have relationships with people, then they go on having children.
So the relation, you know, to develop this situation to the better, to the normal, meaning on the relationship would be.
It's relationship. It means if they're not having children, means Manu mentions that if the wife is happy, then there'll be children. And if she's not happy, there won't be children. So then this would mean, if you're taking this as an overall general statement, you know, or perspective, is that the women aren't very satisfied in their relationships with the men, therefore they're not willing to have children with them.
Right.
And so then everything's going down. That means the men aren't properly trained, therefore then it goes. So occupationally, because what's not trained, it doesn't mean the men aren't good at their occupation. It means they're not good at the ashram side, at the relationship side. And so because that's weak, then it doesn't. And so therefore, since women can't get their satisfaction in the family life, then they also turn to the occupation, because at least then they don't have to depend upon the men to get it, they can get it themselves. You know, and so then you won't have kids. But it's that's what Mona mentions is the cause. Women aren't satisfied, there is no children.
What should be emphasized in the men's education? Indeed.
How to behave like a man, how to be responsible. How to, you know, it means the main thing is sense control and the sensitivity to the needs of others. Because if they're saying, no, I'm the provider, I'm the guy who gets everything, but gets everything for who? So if you're not aware of who you're getting it for, then what's the meaning of you're the provider? You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say people get some welfare from the government, right? Do they see the government as the provider? Not necessarily. They just see they get a check every month and that's all. So the concept that someone's a provider means that there's a relationship. Right? And so the man's thinking, I'm the provider, I have so much, you know, I'm the man of the family, I'm the head of the family, it's my you know, my kingdom, my domain, this and that. But nobody else cares because there's no relationship. So he's providing, yes, so he's in the position of the father. But without the relationship, then how deep is, how developed will the family be? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's why then there's the points of duties, is that the duties also apply to the emotional, intellectual, and spiritual platforms, not just the physical. I've taken care of the physical, I've done my job. Okay, that's one of four. What about the other three? And of the four, the spiritual is actually the most important, right? The soul is most important, because that's who's in the body. They happen to have a body, so you take care of the body so the soul can function, but it's the soul who's functioning, not the body. So the spiritual has to be seen as the main, right? And then using the intelligence for these, how to use everything for these higher purposes, that's the uniqueness of the human intelligence over other intelligence. Otherwise, the animals can do so many things we can't do. You know?
It's really.
So it's just a matter of these things are there. No one wants to take care. You don't want relationships. Who wants to take care of a baby? They yell, they scream, they keep you up all night, you know? Like that. The Bendokhe. A child who is begotten out of lust may not turn out as the parents desire. Right? Because then they have their own desire, there's no sense of duty. And so instead of doing what they should, being trained how they should, applying themselves, they just work on their own desire, what they want. Hence the teenager's statement. You know, you're ruining my life, you know, to their parents. You're ruining my life, I hate you. That's because it's not a matter according to how the parents are thinking that the child will grow up and have these kind of duties, these kind of nature, and the child doesn't want to do those things at all. So that's what it means by not according to desire. You know, we were thinking, what does it mean by desire? Desire is bad. That means the nature that he's thinking of, that's the kind of nature he gets. Is that, you have something? Okay. As stated in the Shastras, yata yonir yata bijam. Yata yoni indicates the mother, and yata bijam indicates the father. If the mental state of the parents is prepared before they have sex, the child which they will beget will certainly reflect their mental condition. It is therefore understood by the words Atma, Samatan, that both Pritumaraj and Archie underwent the Garbhadhan purificatory process before begetting children, and thus they begot all their sons according to their desires and purified mental states. Prithu Maharaj did not beget his children out of lust, nor was he attracted to his wife for sense gratificatory purposes. He begot the children as a grihastha for the future administration of his government all over the world. Right, so he's a kshatriya, then you need more kshatriyas to maintain, right? Because everybody of the populace is also having children, so that means everything's going to expand, so therefore you need more kshatriyas to carry on that tradition, maintain that purified environment. So that's what his mentality is. That's, he's following the process, he gets kshatriyas. Does that make sense? Yes.
Well, so I've heard that, since if you do the Paramahansa Samskara, it might be that those jivas are very rare, and that's why devotees don't get so many children. Can it be true, or?
It can be, but you can't say that, you know, what's their karma before, because having children or not having children is also an aspect of karma, like that. So if someone can't have children, then that generally means there's a problem with the karma. So it's just something from before. So, but one as a grihastha performs one's duties and carries on the process. Because the point is that they have children, grihasthas have children. And so, you know, because your brahmachari is vanaprastha, now they're not having children. So the grihasthas are the ones that have the children. So then they perform those duties. Does that make sense? And then if they get or not children, that's up to Krishna, just like anything else. You want to make money, you make the endeavor, you make money, they don't make money. You know, you try for anything that is there within the context of the grihastha ashram. And so this is one of them. And then the results, that's up to Krishna. Yes, souls are very rare, but I'm sure that there's plenty enough. It says the demigods are waiting in line to take birth in the you know, the families of devotees. So right there, that's 33 million. So, you know, plenty of. Not that, oh, they're so rare you can't catch and this and that. And, you know, because the point is, no, there's plenty. It's just a matter of, you know, are we the one that's there? Is our consciousness, you know, the child we want, or do we have that kind of consciousness, this, that? And it's just a matter of time. That's how they say it. Because otherwise, yeah. Yes?
Is a children's karma purified here by the further samskaras?
Okay. Yes, yes. That's what they're for. The samskaras are there. The samskaras are for the child. Mm-hmm. Only the marriage, then, the marriage and the graduation, that'll be for the boy and the girl. He meets, in other words, the parents. All other samskaras are for that particular living entity. Mm-hmm. For the children. Does that make sense? And so then before becoming parents, then you have the marriage and the graduation. Then the boy becomes qualified to be a father, the girl becomes qualified to be a mother. Then all the rest of them are for the child. Right? Until they come up to that age, then they go through the samskaras and they become parents. Is that It is therefore understood by the words Atma, Samatan, that both Prithu Maharaj and Archie underwent the Garbhadhan purificatory process before begetting children, and thus they begot all their sons according to their desires and purified mental states. Prithu Maharaj did not beget his children out of lust, nor was he attracted to his wife for sense gratificatory purposes. So it's not because of sense gratification that's why there's attraction and that's why there's sex. So it's because of the duty of you want to have the children. That's why it works. Does that make sense? So that's the principle is here. So here is that, you know, people are attracted, but then because the boys don't act properly, the girls don't then respond properly, the boy's not attracted by the girl, the girl's definitely not attracted by the boy, and so they both go to work. And so, you know, how you say the market goes up, but the population goes down. He begot the children as a grihastha for the future administration of his government all over the world. 54. After begetting five sons named Vijitasva, Dumurakesha, Haryaksha, Dravina and Vrika, Vritamars continued to rule the planet. He accepted all the qualities of the deities who governed all other planets. Okay. Now we're coming to the main body of what we were going to look at. Purport. In each and every planet there is a predominating deity. It is understood from Bhagavad Gita that in the sun there is a predominating deity named Vivasvan. Similarly, there is a predominating deity of the moon and of the various planets. Actually, the predominating deities in all the other planets are descendants from the predominating deities of the sun and moon. In this planet Earth, there are two Kshatriya dynasties, and one comes from the predominating deity of the sun, and the other from the predominating deity of the moon. These dynasties are known as Suryavamsa and Chandravamsa, respectively. When monarchy existed on this planet, the chief member was one of the members of the Surya dynasty, or Suryavamsa, and the subordinate kings belonged to the Chandravamsa. However, Maharaj Prithu was so powerful that he could exhibit all the qualities of the predominating deities in the other planets. Right? So he was to such a degree that even though he had his position, he was able to manifest all the qualities of all the others in a great degree. Because otherwise they're all coming in the sun or the moon line. And so then you'll take it, they have some of the qualities of the one to the other. But these really powerful kings, then they have the qualities of all the planets. Right? And that's how then everything goes so smooth. Does that make sense? So everything's coming down from that. It means that that element of the intelligence, the element of the mind, so these come down. So the Suryavamsa is always the predominant. So that's generally what we see. And all the lines that we see, they're the ones that are predominant. The ones in the moon, then they come up sometimes. Just like, even though he's such a, in one sense, a predominant king, then, what is his name? Yeah. Don't remember. He was a king of Ujjain. And he ruled actually for 2,000 years, you know, in recent time. But you don't hear much about them because they're moon dynasty. You mainly hear about the sun dynasty. Does that make sense? Yeah. In the modern age, people from Earth have tried to go to the moon, but they have not been able to find anyone there. What to speak of meeting the moon's predominating deity? The Vedic literature, however, repeatedly informs us that the moon is full of highly elevated inhabitants, who are counted amongst the demigods. We are therefore always in doubt about what kind of moon adventure the modern scientists of this planet Earth have undertaken. Very subtly presented. But it's like, they're all there, so what kind of, what did they actually do? Where did they actually go? Text 55. Since Maharaj Prithu was a perfect devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he wanted to protect the Lord's creation by pleasing the various citizens according to their various desires. Therefore, Prithu Maharaj used to please them in all respects by his words, mentally, works, by his words, mentality, works, and gentle behavior. Purport. As will be explained in the next verse, Prithu Maharaj used to please all kinds of citizens by his extraordinary capacity to understand the mentality of others. Indeed, his dealings were so perfect that every one of the citizens was very much satisfied and lived in complete peace. Yeah. So this is probably after mentioning basically that the leadership, you know, devote ISKCON leadership, you know, the first principle is being Krishna conscious. The next point that's being made is they should be able to understand others' mentalities. Right? And so that's how Upadvan Ashram system is for, is you understand mentalities. Therefore, you can engage somebody according to their position. And that's what he says, used to please them in all respects. Words, mentality, works, and gentle behavior. So that's then how one applies these things. Right? Because if you can't see, how do you know what words to use, what mood to use, what activity to use? And at the same time, how do you engage them if you don't know? Right? So this idea is that we don't worry about varnashram, we'll just engage anybody how I like because I'm just being practical. In the short term, you could call it practical, but in the long term, how practical is it? Yeah. Does that make sense? Since many of those, yeah. Okay. It's just it's. So we see here is that Prithu Maharishi, who was the perfect king, he followed that principle. That's one of his points of success. The word achyutatmaka is significant in this verse. For Maharishi Prithu used to rule this planet as the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? So that's the first point. You're representing Krishna by doing everything according to the directions that are given by Krishna, you know, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Right? He knew that he was the representative of the Lord and that the Lord's creation must be protected intelligently. Right? So, since it's there, all that you have, the temple, all the devotees, all the facilities, that's all Krishna's, and you have to take care of it to see that it's taken care of nicely. So how to engage it nicely in Krishna's service? It's Krishna's. What are the opportunities to engage it, and who are the people to engage it? So it's not just engaging, it's engaging the people in doing it. Right? It's just like, okay, we have Tulsi, and so then the devotees take care of Tulsi. Right? That's the whole point. Not that we hire karmis to take care of Tulsi. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea. The having facilities is so that we can, therefore, be involved in engaging people in devotional service. That's the whole point of leadership, to engage others in devotional service. You're engaged in devotional service, you're engaging others in devotional service. That's the one straight. Yeah. Atheists cannot understand the purpose behind the creation. Although this material world is condemned, when it is compared to the spiritual world, there is still some purpose behind it. Right? We'll say so many things about the material world, but in actuality, its purpose is to be engaged in the service of the Lord. If that's done, then it's as good as the spiritual world. Right? But if it's not, then all those condemnations that we make, then those stand, you know, we don't try to negate them. Right? Nor do they believe in the existence of a creator. They try to establish everything by their so-called scientific research. But they do not center anything around the Supreme Creator. A devotee, however, can understand the purpose of the creation, which is to give facilities to the individual living entities who want to lord it over the material nature. Right? That's why they've been put here. But the actual purpose is that the facilities are given so that one can engage in devotional service. Right? So then, management means organizing those facilities so that the maximum amount of people can take advantage to engage in devotional service. That's what we're trying to do. The ruler of this planet should therefore know that all the inhabitants, especially human beings, have come to this material world for a sense enjoyment. It is therefore the duty of the ruler to satisfy them in their sense enjoyment, as well as to elevate them to Krishna consciousness, so that they can ultimately return home back to Godhead. So how do they get satisfied in their sense enjoyment? Right? By our previous discussion, that means you have to have facility. Right? So that means there has to be economic development. So what does that mean? There has to be dharma. So when the king sees that everyone's engaged according to their nature in their duties, then the artha will come, they can engage the senses, and then they can be interested in the spiritual. Because if I don't have any facility, you think, if I had that facility, then I could be Krishna conscious. If you have the facility, then you can understand it doesn't make you Krishna conscious. It's not any different. Right? That's the reason for arranging stuff in such a way that people have facility. Because then having that facility, they can see that facility doesn't make me happy as a soul. Then Krishna consciousness becomes easier. Otherwise, so many become distracted because they're trying so hard to find that facility. And then with that facility, yes, then I'll have this, I'll have that, then I'll be Krishna conscious, and everything will be wonderful. But in actuality, Krishna consciousness, the wonderfulness of Krishna consciousness has nothing to do with the material facilities. It's independent, so it doesn't require that. That's the advantage of having this facility. Now, if by having facility you'll forget Krishna, then Krishna won't give you the facility either. Unless you want to forgive Krishna, then you get the facility and then get distracted. But if you actually want to be Krishna conscious, Krishna won't give you the facility, because if he does, you'll get distracted. Right? And if he doesn't, and if you don't get distracted, then you can have it. So if you actually want something, you have to give up your attachment to it. Whatever you want, you can get as long as you give up your attachment to it.
To the thing itself? Giving up your attachment to the thing itself or to the...
Whatever. But you start from whatever you perceive. Because generally, you perceive the thing itself. You don't, you're not perceiving the metaphysical, what's behind it. Like the guy who wants the fancy car. Why does he want the fancy car? He can hardly drive. It's for the social prestige. Someone else wants the fancy car for, you know, its roadability. Like that. So that's different. So whatever is the quality you're looking for. You know, so therefore, what's special? Okay, you're driving down the road and you feel the G-force as you go around the corner or the, to the back of the seat as you accelerate. Okay, great. You know, the handling is perfect. Everything's right in range. You can just do everything just with your little fingers like this. It feels very professional. Okay, and then so that thing, but how does that satisfy the soul? Material professionalism, how does that satisfy the soul? You know, mechanical perfection, how does that satisfy the soul? If that were there, then technically according to this, then Germans should be, you know, the most self-realized people on the planet. But they're not. You know, they're as grumpy as anybody else. You know, in fact, they're famous for being grumpy. Okay, nice flower boxes, you know, but grumpy. Does that make sense? So, that's the whole thing, is that by engaging in this, then this twofold thing happens. One, you engage in your duties, which according to Dharma, then are the things that are useful in engaging in Krishna's service. Because technically that which is recommended by Dharma, that's the thing to offer to Krishna. It means if you don't have that, you offer whatever you have. But in actuality, if you're looking at Krishna's pleasure, we would look at following Dharma and then offer that to Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, yeah, that's the only occasion where we would change our situation, meaning we would change the gross form to the subtle form, rather to a gross from a gross form that is impious to a gross form that's pious. But the principle of what we're working in is going to be the same. Does that make sense? Someone uses his house for impious purposes. You know, he likes parties and this and that, and you know, it's all crazy and everything like that. But now if he purifies himself, then he won't have those parties. So it looks like he's changing his lifestyle. But he'll have big programs, invite devotees over, have kirtan, have prasad, have discussions about the Lord. Does that make sense? So they have the nature to be a host. But before the host hosting was for sense gratification, now they're a host for that. Just depends where you go. Then you'll see the lifestyle doesn't change. The sense we tend to look at it from the gross point of view. Then the tendency is to see, oh, but lifestyle changed, but it says you don't have to change your lifestyle. He just purified his lifestyle. So in that way, your lifestyle doesn't have to change, it just has to become purified. And you don't have to separately purify it just by the process of chanting Hare Krishna, you will get purified. It's just that we should not stand in the way of purification. When we do come to a higher level of consciousness, we should accept that, not be attached to our lower levels of consciousness. You know, or if we're attached to our lower levels of consciousness and other people are advancing, we shouldn't tell them they don't need to advance, because then that will make us more comfortable that I'm attached. You know, I said, I'm attached, you're attached, you know, we're all attached, everything's, then it's okay. But if I'm attached and nobody else is attached, then I look bad. Does that make sense? Yeah, so we have to be careful of that. That all this, oh, we're Westerners, we don't have to follow all these Vedic kind of things. Is that due to, you know, something elevating? Or is that due to my attachment to not following those things and I need an excuse of everybody, no one's following, then what can I do? Does that make sense? You know, I've heard, yeah. So. Yeah. Did that answer it, or we went off on a tangent and didn't actually deal with it? Okay. Yes.
Maharaj, did I understand correctly that this, what is said here, that to rule as the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the universal principle people like me, who is engaged, who is running kind of useless and meaningless business could follow, and at the same time worrying why I'm running such a radio station that is playing mundane hits, and I'm just like a drug seller. The better I work, the less, the more they are attracted to these stupid songs. What to do, how to be, but I'm here for more than 20 years, etc. Mm-hmm. That if one can maintain this attitude, mm-hmm. that is the first step to start.
Yes.
And that is even more important that, okay, I'm working, but sometimes I'm donating some Lakshmi, mm-hmm. but this is more important, this overall mentality. Just yes. you are there, you are just representative. And then if you maintain that mentality, then Krishna will give you some vision how to
do.
Yeah, because yeah, all my employees are meat eaters. Yeah, what to do? So, yeah, that's, is it that this is the first
step? Yeah, that's the first step. That's the first step, and as I mentioned, the second step is that to be able to see the individual natures of those who work in the establishment and engage them according to their actual abilities.
That's the second. Yeah, second.
That's the second. Means yeah. The point is how will you be able to engage them according to Dharma if you yourself are not following Dharma? And of Dharma, the real purpose is Sanatana Dharma. So therefore, oneself is representing Sanatana Dharma, therefore you can engage Dharma in Sanatana Dharma. But if you yourself aren't practicing Sanatana Dharma, then one can't engage others in devotional service. And if one's not understanding the principle of Dharma, then how do you elevate and purify? Because those who are attached, they're attached to the external. So that's what Dharma is for, is how does that, what they're attached to, how that can be engaged in the service. That's what you're trying to do. And so then you have, what are the laws governing the physical application of what it is, what's the emotional, the attitude behind it, what's the, you know, the intellectual, what's the metaphysical, and all these things, you can take people through the whole process. Does that make sense? But you're starting from there. So if you're representing the Lord, that means how to get people from the position they're in to being Krishna conscious.
But does it mean that in our preaching process to businessmen, shouldn't we then emphasize this aspect first? Not that, well, if you donate some money, that's fine.
It depends upon if they're able to catch these subtleties. If they are, then you start there. But otherwise, then in the process, yes, you begin by giving the results, because we want the results for sense gratification. So mm-hmm. if the results are hard for sense gratification, we give that to the Lord, then yes, the whole thing's purified. Mm-hmm. But we will elevate ourselves as we see this, because the point is this business has a methodology. You can't not use it. And so then, by understanding that the science of business is actually an eternal principle, and that eternal principle is governed by the Supreme. So therefore, understanding that, in this way you are representing the Supreme, in that you're seeing that you do everything according to the Supreme, and you're seeing that everybody else is. So at least on that level is the first part. So you're seeing that everybody is following the science of business, because you know it comes from Krishna. And so that's why if you want to do business, you have to follow God's laws on it. So then they're addressed on the grossest form. Right? And so that would be the mechanics of it, that would be the attitude of it. And so these aspects can be there. Then slowly, if you can see ways to do it, then you start engaging on the higher levels. You know, improving the consciousness. But at least you can be there. It doesn't mean representative. Now what you say is, you know, coming from God. You know, it's not that you, after having your, meeting, you know, with whatever you do to work out, okay, what direction or what you're going to be playing, you know, on the radio, that after, you know, it's come to a conclusion that, okay, this is what we're going to do, we're going to be playing, you know, these, you know, top hits and this and that, and then you announce, yes, this is God's will, and then they all go, yes, God's will. No, it's that you don't do. That's not what's meant by representing the Supreme. It means that the law is there, you're following the law, so therefore, and since you're the one following the law and seeing that others are following the law, you're representing the Lord in them following the law. So you're still the servant, one doesn't become the master. Yes, but that's how you can, that's why anything can be connected. Because you're saying, you're just looking at business, that's connected because mechanically it follows the laws that Krishna has done. And you're seeing how that's being engaged to Krishna. They don't see. That's the whole point, is even if the Shudras don't see, then the Dvijas should. And then they'll get benefit, and then they'll also slowly get benefit, because they associate with him, and so there's something there. You know? So, okay. So we'll stop here for a few minutes. 55. Atheists cannot understand the purpose behind the creation. Although the material world is condemned when it is compared to the spiritual world, there's still some purpose behind it. Modern scientists and philosophers cannot understand that purpose, nor do they believe in the existence of the Creator. They try to establish everything by the so-called scientific research. They do not center anything around the Supreme Creator. So-called scientific research, because scientific research means you observe the phenomena, seeing the patterns that are there in the phenomena, and then you come up with your theories. Now, according to if we're being scientific, you have to take into consideration all possibilities. So that there is a supreme controller is a possibility. There either is or there isn't. Right? So on this topic, then that there is 50%. Right? But they work on 100% that can't be. So that's not scientific. That's biased. That's subjective. Right? But they'll take, no, but if you believe in that, that's subjective. No, but they're already subjective. So that's why we say is that they can't understand, because they just say there can't be. Right? A devotee, however, can understand the purpose of creation, which is to give facilities to the individual living entity, someone to lord it over material nature. The ruler of this planet should therefore know that all the inhabitants, especially human beings, have come to this material world for sense enjoyment. It is therefore the duty of the ruler to satisfy them in their sense enjoyment, as well as to elevate them to Krishna consciousness. And they all can ultimately turn home back to Godhead. So that doesn't mean the citizens can now demand, see, the government's supposed to give us our sense gratification. No, because that's not their duty. Their duty is to perform what obligations they have, and the government performs their obligations. But if everyone sits around not doing their obligations and just demanding what rights they should have from others, that's not going to get anywhere either. With this idea in mind, the king or government head should rule the world. In this way, everyone will be satisfied. Kaka's plan is elaborately described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Even in this fallen age, if the rulers, governors, and presidents take advantage of Prikumar's example, there will certainly be a reign of peace and prosperity throughout the world. Right? So the point is that no matter who's ruling or what system you're using, if you use this principle that is God's creation, he makes the laws, we govern according to those laws, you know, for the pleasure of the Supreme, then we will find that whoever it is, there will be peace and prosperity. Right? Because that's how you tell if the kingdom is going well. You know, we study some kingdoms that all they do is conquer. Like, Alexander. He's only known for conquering, not actually for maintaining. Because it's known that after he conquered a place, when he moved on to conquer the next, the previous one that he had already conquered just went back to its status quo before. So even though in one sense you can say he conquered the known world at the time, so in that way he's the emperor of the world, you know, but the point is he didn't rule basically much, hardly any of it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the point is this peace and prosperity, that's how you judge if a kingdom is going well. There's no wars, everything's going peacefully, it's prosperous and all that. It means across the whole range, not just a few individuals are prosperous. That's how you tell, because in peace, then you can actually, economics can develop. In war, it doesn't develop for across the board. Like if a place is having a war on their soil, it doesn't develop. Only once the war is over, then it develops. Does that make sense?
Could you elaborate on that part? The duty of the ruler to satisfy them in their sense enjoyment. What's the proper
That's what it means. But how do they enjoy the senses? By artha, how do they get artha? By performing a dharma. So the ruler has to see that they're doing that dharma. Otherwise, how will they enjoy the senses? It's not that he gives them sense gratification. He creates the environment in which they can perform their duties. Duties being performed, there'll be prosperity. In other words, if there's peace, then there'll be prosperity, and then with that prosperity, then they can engage their senses.
So it means that he decides how to satisfy their sense enjoyment.
No. He sees that they're following their duties so that they therefore prosper and therefore satisfy their desires.
But from their perspective, it looks that he decides.
But who is this? Who are we? Who is this example for? Who are we addressing here?
We're talking about the king.
Yes.
The king understand and consider that from the opposite side, it would look that he's kind of imposed some.
But that we can do without education. It's just like this. Okay, let us say the parents, okay? And they want to see to the sense gratification of their child.
Yeah.
Okay? So they're looking forward to that they will be happily married with in a proper social situation with, you know, sufficient funds and facilities and all that. How's that going to happen?
Education.
How is that going to work? They do their homework.
Yeah.
So that they go to school, they focus on their education, they do their homework. That's what the parents are seeing that they're doing. And so it's only through education the child will understand that that's being taken care of. Otherwise, then you get the, you know, how do you say, I hate you kind of scenario. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So it's that they have to understand that. But on the day-to-day, you're seeing that they're comfortable, they're taken care of. And this. So sense gratification means here is that the senses are gratified by engagement in their natural position. Right? It means you have food, and the food is properly cooked and arranged and served, and the atmosphere is nice, then senses are gratified. It doesn't mean that gratifying their senses means the kid, you know, just eats chocolate all day.
Okay, because
that's his idea.
Because he still wouldn't satisfy his senses.
But you're never going to satisfy anyway. He eats chocolate all day. He's supposed to get sick, and then, you know, how you say, spending the whole night, you know, vomiting at the toilet, how is that sense gratification? You know? So the point is it's according to dharma. That's where we're saying, that's why all these things before are established. Because otherwise, if we come in and start with this, then this will be the discussion. No, but here you have to say, no, but the point is the senses can't be satisfied. Only in connection with the Lord they can be satisfied. And therefore, because we started only at verse 44.
Mm-hmm.
Before that was all the philosophy. You know, we'll think, oh, up to here was all the philosophy. No, that was just the conclusion of the philosophy, showing how Preetu Maharaj was following all that, and therefore what he was following. But all the discussion of that, and how the senses can't be satisfied in that, and so unless they're engaged in the Lord's service. So the pure devotee can engage in all these activities, and it's still, he sees it all in relationship to the Lord. And so, but it's seeing according to the scriptures, not he just sees, I see that driving around in my Lamborghini all day is devotional service. That doesn't mean that it is. You have to see like what they're talking here. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Your point earlier about kingdoms reminded me of a documentary I saw very recently about the Shah of Iran. And I watched it because I was interested to see how it could be that Prabhupada was there on the invitation of Burijan Prabhu and Jagatarini, who had started a center in Tehran. And of course, the Shah was forced to abdicate by the Ayatollah Khomeini and his movement because they considered his ways to be anti-Islamic, although he had appointed himself king and in his platform propagated himself to be a religious king. So my question is, how is it that this particular case, if you want to call it a case study, how could it have happened the way that it did?
But the whole point is, was the Ayatollah, was he Wahhabi?
That I don't know.
Because then I know of all these movements that are all militaristic.
He was Shia. He was Shia extremist.
He was Shia, but was he a Wahhabi?
The Wahhabis are Sunni, so he was a Shia extremist.
Oh, they're Shia. Yeah. So it means, this was told to me by a Shiite. That, like in Varnashram, you have the Brahmins, and they're kind of like the head of the society, like that, because they, you know, what they know and all that. So he was saying the Shiites are like the Brahmins, and the Sunnis are like the rest of the population. Whether that's true, that was the Shiite's view. So, but he's an extremist. So the whole point is they have their own ideas. It's not necessarily that they're following the tradition handed down, because the point was that area of the world, Iran was always a leader politically. You know, you go back to the Persian Empire, that was them. The Ottoman Empire, that was them. You know, all these, they've always been a very prominent role, you know, because they were, you know, just the next over from India. Right? It means right after the area where the Brahmins stayed, then that's the next place. Like that. Does that make sense? Well, actually, they're after all the madmen in Afghanistan.
Right.
You know, because they've always been a very strong, tough bunch, because they're the other half. It means you have that whole area of the Punjab, they're all very strong, tough, big, well-built people. So they're always a very strong group. So they seem to be continuation of the same kind of breed of people. So because of this aspect, then they can't appreciate how people have to be able to comfortably live their life.
Yeah.
Like that. You want to see that they are engaged in the development of spiritual cultivation. But one can't be extreme. That's the whole point in the Vedic, is that since the whole thing's voluntary, it's through education that you inspire people to do. It means they can't be involved in improper activities. But then that how you define that improper, you have to see. Does that make sense? That's why we take Shastra. Otherwise, any individual will define himself.
What stoked the ire of the Ayatollah was that the Shah had held a 3-day, extremely lavish ceremony for his coronation.
Okay.
And the rest of the population, of course, was suffering.
So then that's improper. You do it according to what's going on in the kingdom. So it means that if the people are suffering, then you'll keep things, you know. The main point is that you have there's a certain attitude, you know, that dignity and that, it's not exactly ritualistic, but that formality that's there in the kingdom, the nobility, like that, that has to be maintained, though it can be done it doesn't have to be a very expensive affair,
mm-hmm.
It just is very formal. You know, everyone standing around formally, making their speeches formally, you know, this and that, all everything being done on time and according to the plan. That kind of stuff can be done, and it doesn't have to cost very much. So that gets his ire that, okay, that's there, but did he continue like that? Did he at any point start to work and try to benefit the people?
Yes, the latter.
Yeah, so then if that's there, then they should drop the other one, because in other words, he's doing that, he has that opulence, and then that will be brought in, and then the people are starting to prosper, and then nice. So then you see it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just pick one thing and only go by that, that's money already spent. What about the present money? Is it being misspent? If it is, and it's continuing, then you can have that complaint. But if the present it's not, then one would have to change one's view. You know? But the difficulty is you know, people have their own idea. And so that becomes a difficulty, because it should be, if one's religious, it's able to harmonize, and if by being religious it doesn't harmonize, then there's the emphasis is in the wrong place.
Yeah.
right? Because, you know, technically, how you say, everybody's, how you say, God's children, right? So therefore, you have to see how that will all be taken care of. It's not that, you know, your brother took your sandwich and that's wrong, so you killed him. No, it's like, you know what I'm saying? You know, the whole thing with Cain and Abel, it's not looked on in a good light. Okay, text 56. Bharatapriya became as celebrated a king as Somaraj, the king of the moon. He was also powerful and exacting, just like the sun god, who distributes heat and light and at the same time exacts all the planetary waters. Purport. In this verse, Bharatapriya is compared to the kings of the moon and the sun. The king of the moon and the king of the sun serve as examples of how the Lord desires the universe to be ruled. The sun distributes heat and light, and at the same time exacts water from all planets. Right? So that's how it is. He's distributing heat and light, so that means everything grows and processes by heat and light. So because he's spreading this so that everything can develop and prosper, therefore then the tax can be there. Right? You can expect that people will do their duties, everything will go on properly. Right? So the king, by the proper performance of his duties and how he arranges it, everybody can be, can develop. But then that means then tax is there. People have to do what they're supposed to do. The moon is very pleasing at night, and when one becomes fatigued after a day's labor in the sun, he can enjoy the moonshot. Yeah, so then the moonshine then is very pleasing. So therefore when the citizens see the king, they're very pleased, just like seeing the moon. Because there's that refreshing element. He's taking care, he's doing everything nicely, his behavior, how he deals, everything is very nicely balanced and everything. So like the sun god, Pritamars distributed his heat and light to give protection to his kingdom. For without heat and light, no one can exist. Similarly, Pritamars exacted taxes and gave such strong orders to the citizens and government that no one had the power to disobey him. So it says here, to the citizens and government. Right? So government means the civil servants. So not that the civil servants are in the position of government, so now they can take advantage of these citizens. Right? Because even though technically civil servants are citizens, they have a tendency to act as if they're the government and not citizens, so therefore they can get the benefits. Right? Meaning, they being the government, therefore they can get all the benefits, rather than they're a citizen who's doing this civil service. So he has to see that both are in line, the citizens and the government are in line. That's the position of the head of state. Not the government is out of line and citizens have to be kept in line. Or this other way, that the government has to be kept in line, but the citizens aren't kept in line. You know, it has to be balanced. On the other hand, he pleased everyone just like the moonshine. Both the sun and the moon have particular influences by which they maintain order in the universe. And modern scientists and philosophers should become familiar with the Supreme Lord's perfect plan for universal maintenance. Because if they are familiar with that, then they'll use their knowledge properly. Because this is how it's supposed to be done. It's not that government is another economic venue. No, it's for creating that peace and prosperity so that people can actually develop. Right? It's not meant to make money. Right? It makes money by taxes because they're providing. So if everything's taken care of nicely, no one comments about the taxes. But if people are paying the same taxes and everything doesn't work that the government takes care of, you know, the roads and this and all these things, then you feel bad about the taxes. Okay. 57. Bharatapriya was so strong and powerful that no one could disobey his orders any more than one could conquer fire itself. He was so strong that he was compared to Indra, the king of heaven, whose power is insuperable. On the other hand, Bharatapriya was also as tolerant as the earth, and fulfilling various desires of human society, he was like heaven itself. And so he sees this a very interesting presentation that it's showing, he's going through the planets, like Manu will give the same definitions, but they'll go through one planet after another. But here, they're going through the planets as they match each other. It means one is one way, one's the other way, so it's the balance of the two. You know, the thunderbolt and the rose, right? So the sun is the thunderbolt side, and the moon is the rose side. Does that make sense? So we see that in the prayers to Krishna, is that most all the prayers that you see, well, basically all the prayers will do it, is they bring out the contradictory elements within the Lord. Because the Lord, being the source of everything, all seeming contradictions, since they're part of His creation, are reconciled in Him. Right? So if someone's representing the Lord here, then they should, all these things that seeming are contradictory should be reconciled. Right? Because if you think of someone who's very strong, very strict, makes everything work nicely, that no one's going to like them. But we see is like the sun, his order cannot be disobeyed, but at the same time everyone's pleased to see him. That's how the balance works. So it doesn't come up as, you know, the question of is it better to be loved or feared doesn't come up. It has to be both.
Yeah.
You have to be loved and feared. And that fear means it's respect. So once the affection is there, but that respect has to be there. If that's not there, what relationship can work nicely? If there's only affection and no respect, then you don't deal properly with it. Right? There's only respect, no affection, then it becomes very stiff, very formal. Does that make sense? Yeah, because it's not uncommon that in dealing with the ruler, it's that the people, it's not that they don't feel some closeness. Right? You know, it's just like in, how you say, in dealing with, let's say, the king or queen. You know, in England, then they all have respect and everything like that, but how do they refer? You know? It means the common person, when they talk about, you know, the Princess Diana, what's the term they use?
The people's princess.
Hmm?
The people's princess.
People's princess, that's there, but if they refer to her just in a conversation, it's not a formal conversation, how do they refer to her?
Princess of.
Hmm?
Princess of something.
No, no, that's the formal. Never heard the term die?
Oh, yeah.
You know, or Queen Elizabeth, good Queen Beth. You never heard that? A little too old. Okay. that's Elizabeth the First. Thank God. So, the point is there's that, there's the, you know, the names, you know, that's the prince that's William or Charles or like that. But since when, you know, but if they're talking to them, they're not going to say, you know, hey, Chucks, how's it going? Right? They're not going to do that. Right? They're going to refer to him as, you know, Your Highness or whatever's the appropriate thing. But the point is that comfort, that familiarity, that's the element we mean, is that they're both that respect is there and that affection. So then where it's appropriate, they're dealing. This makes sense. So, as a representative of the Lord, therefore these seeming contradictory qualities are all what's required. Right? Because everything's a contradiction anyway. Right? So. Purport. It is the duty of a king to give protection to the citizens and to fulfill their desires. At the same time, the citizens must obey the laws of the state. That's how it goes together. Not that, oh, you have to fulfill my desires, and my desire is that I don't follow any laws. No, you follow all the laws, and it's seen that the people get the benefit. Right? So if benefit's not coming, what's wrong? The king has to try to fix it. Right? The weather's bad, why not? They're not doing enough sacrifice, people are doing something wrong, he tries to fix it. That was just on your previous question. That's the balance, is that they have to follow the laws, you try to take care. So, in other words, you see that they're comfortable and satisfied in their work and their facility that's there. The same time as they have to follow the rules of the place. You know, so it's a balance. So they're doing what you say, and you're trying to take care of them. So that balances things. Maharaj Prithu maintained all the standards of good government, and he was so invincible that no one could disobey his order any more than a person could stop heat and light emanating from a fire. And so that's the point. It's just like that he could get things done. So you see, that's the quality that's brought out, like with Arjuna, you know, or with Maharaj Parikit, how when he heard about Kali Raj, immediately he goes there with an Akshahini of soldiers. One guy, he goes with an Akshahini, right? Because what he's doing is so bad. So he's going to take care. You know, there's no question of Kali Raj not submitting. Right? He has to follow the order. He was so strong and powerful that he was compared to the king of heaven, Indra. In this age, modern scientists have been experimenting with nuclear weapons. And in a former age, they used to release Brahmastras, but all these Brahmastras and nuclear weapons are insignificant compared to the thunderbolt of the king of heaven. When Indra releases a thunderbolt, even the biggest hills and mountains crack, because the nuclear thing goes off and the mountain's still there. In fact, the cement structure of the building's still there, just the windows and doors are missing. Right? Roof may be blown off if it's got a pitched roof, but if it's a flat roof, it's still there. Right? But Indra, he can crack mountains with this thunderbolt. On the other hand, Maharaj Prithu was as tolerant as the earth itself. And he fulfilled all the desires of his citizens just like torrents of rain from the sky. Without rainfall, it is not possible to fulfill one's various desires on this planet. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7.3.14, Parjam Yad Anasambhavaha, food grains are produced only because rain falls from the sky. Without grains, no one on this earth can be satisfied. Consequently, an unlimited distribution of mercy is compared to the water falling from the clouds. Maharaj Prithu distributed his mercy incessantly, much like rainfall. In other words, Maharaj Prithu was softer than a rose flower and harder than a thunderbolt. In this way, he ruled over his kingdom. Right, so, rain is there, it's distributed, and that gives the grains. How does the rain come? From sacrifice. So he sees that everyone follows the order, they're doing their duty, that's the austerity. They're all performing by performance of their duties, then all this facility comes. They don't perform their duties, none of these facilities come. So if there's a shortage and all that these days, it's because people aren't actually performing their duties. Right? They may be doing economically quite well, but in other areas, then it's not working well. Because those areas of duties, that's where the lack is. So when one corrects that, then things work more nicely. So then he's taking care of everyone, he sees the laws there, no one can disobey his law because he'll follow up on things. Not that he makes a law and doesn't follow up. He makes a law, he follows up. In other words, you establish the law that, and you can take care of that law. So that's the point. He knows the law, he lives the law, he can establish the law. And he'll follow up to see the people are. So that's what he's checking. How are people following? Right? And in following, it means it's according to their nature. Because the point is, the Vedic system is that the rules that you're supposed to follow are the rules that match your nature. So those are the rules you are going to be comfortable doing. Right? You know, just like the businessman is supposed to be religious, you know, to respect the saintly persons. He's supposed to make money, he's supposed to give in charity, and he's supposed to, you know, make money as if there's no tomorrow. That's his duty. You could say, oh, but he's so materialistic. No, that's his duty to make money like that. That's how you make money. Because Chanakya says, you should make money as if you're going to live forever. And you should, in other words, your endeavor in economics should be as if you're going to live forever. And your endeavor in spiritual life as if you're going to die. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the principle, is that's how it has to work. You can't think, oh, what if I invest this, and what if it doesn't work, and then what if nobody buys, or what if nobody wants? You can't think like that. He has to just do it, right? And then making that money, now then is the thing of how it'll be used in a proper way, how it'll be given in charity, how it'll be reinvested properly, all these different things. Does that make sense? So, it's according to their duty. Right? Shudras engage in art forms. That's what they love. They love art. They don't like anything else. Right? And so therefore they engaged in that. That's what they do. Kshatriyas like to rule. That's what they do. Brahmins like to study and teach. That's what they do. Does that make sense? Like that. So you can say, Shudras, why would they want to assist others? Because if you assist others, you have no responsibility. Right? Shudra wants to go to work, make his money, and go home. He doesn't want responsibility for the business or the society or anything else, the educate. Right? People send their kids to the school. Do they want responsibility for running the school? No, because then they got to take care of everyone's kid. They're not into that. That's Brahmin business. They're only into their own kid. Right? They want to, you know, run the government, take the responsibility. They may want to tell the government how to run itself, but do they want to see that the garbage is collected and thrown out, and the new you know, garbage dump is being created, and then after that create a park out of that, and the sewage system, the water system, the tax system, you know, see that all the roads are going on? Or they want to, no, they don't want to do that. They just want a few big words about how they should, you know, do this or do that, or, you know, that's all. They don't want to take the responsibility. Right? Person goes to work. He works at the business. Does he want to run the business? No. He just wants to have the money. You understand? So the shooter is happy working for others. He doesn't want to have to do it himself. Because if he tries to run his own business or try to do these things, it won't work very well for him. But you can tell when an artist runs a business, right? So they do that when it comes to crafts. So Manu says that if they can't work for someone else, they can work at a craft that is useful for other people. Right? But you'll see as the business never really grows. You know, it'll come up to a point, you know, kind of maintain. It'll never dynamically, you won't see them opening in, you know, I say, 20 countries of the world and all this and that. It just doesn't happen. You come today and they have a business, you come back after 20 years, it's basically the same. Because that means an artist is running it. Because they make this stuff themselves, they sell it themselves. Well, the businessman, he may start off making it himself, but then from the profit, then he'll hire somebody. Right? The Shudra, he makes profit off of it, he just uses it and does little things, maybe gets a few more things for the shop, and it grows very slow. But the Vaishya, then he'll do it himself, make the profit, now he'll hire guys to make the things like that, and then like this will grow. I told that story of the businessman, and he, during the partition, he came across, they were big landlords in you know, the in Sindh. And so then when that became Pakistan, being Hindu, then they came across into India. And I guess it wasn't very comfortable, all that, so when they came across India, they didn't stop, you know, Punjab or Rajasthan or Gujarat. They kept going until they got to Madhya Pradesh, which is the next state over. So they wanted to make sure there's plenty of space between them and, you know, the new state. So that means when they came, he had 100 rupees. That's it. Even though they were landlords, he had 700 acres of land that he controlled and this and that. So they were well situated. So he came over, he took his 100 rupees, and he bought a tree, a big tree. Himself, he cut the tree down, cut it into firewood, you know, took it to the market, sold it. Right? From the profit of that, then he bought more trees and he hired people to cut the trees and to cut it up into firewood. So he didn't have to do it himself. Right? Because he would focus on the business side, let them do the work side. And then he kept doing that until 1 year after he started from the first tree, he went to Bombay and bought the most expensive hotel there and then ran that. That's a businessman. Understand? You know, like the Prabhupada says, you know, Kshatriya. He says, you have these two kings fighting. And they're fighting with swords. Then one of them, the sword gets lost or broken, so he pulls out his dagger, right? Daggers are short, swords are long. So you have the advantage with the sword over the dagger. So because of the advantage of the sword, the Kshatriya with the sword, then he's able to he stabs the, you know, or runs him through like this, whatever, the Kshatriya with the dagger. But he's still too far away.
Eviscerates.
Yeah. He can't. So the Kshatriya who's been stabbed grabs the hilt of the sword along with the, you know, Kshatriya, because he's holding it, pushes the sword through his stomach so that the other Kshatriya is now right next to him, and then with the dagger kills him. Prabhupada said, that Kshatriya. Like that. So that's what we mean. That's a businessman. That's a Kshatriya. Right? So all this, people sit around, have meetings, talk, and this goes on for years. That's neither Kshatriya nor Vaishya. Now we could discuss whether that's Brahman or Shudra, but whatever it is. But it's not Kshatriyas or Vaishyas. Because they would never tolerate that. Has to be practical, has to be happening now. New plan, new direction. You have 9 months, you have 90 days to see that it's going in the proper direction. It's starting to work. Not that years go by, still people are just talking and not sure, and we're getting somewhere because, you know, we've had meetings and no one kills each other, so it's looking up. That's not any of these two. In other words, that's not people who can organize this. Does that make sense? Because Brahmins and Shudras aren't necessarily known for organizing things. So, therefore, the two groups of organizers, it's not that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, when he says, this is the way it's going to go down, because this is what the Shastra says, this is the tradition, this is what works, then people follow it. But at the same time, he's constantly trying to benefit the citizens by seeing that things are going nicely. He's trying to develop everything nicely. He's seeing that everybody's being protected. All facilities are there. Like that. So that's what the government does. Does that make sense? So it has that both, the thunderbolt and the rose. It has to be both. You know. People who profess that no, the government, everything should be like a rose, are, you know, complaining against those who are just like a thunderbolt. But replacing the thunderbolt with a rose will fail, and you'll just end up with another thunderbolt. Right? Does that make sense? You know, you had Louis XIV, you know, the thunderbolt, and ends up with Louis XVI, who's like a rose, and then they get rid of him, and then you get, Napoleon. You understand? That's just how it goes. Every in history, it always goes like that. You know, you get rid of, you have the Yeah, every revolution, everything like that, you'll always find it's there. So that's why it has to be balanced. If it's too much this way, the modern thing, oh no, you always have to encourage, no, don't do that, don't do this. It fails, it will fail, it will always fail. But if it's only hard, that will fail also. It has to be balanced. Where hard is needed, hard is used. Where soft is needed, soft is used. But to say it always has to be harder, always has to be soft, both these schools will fail. So we see here in two examples how, like the sun and moon, or like Indra and then the earth. Right? The earth is very, very tolerant. Therefore, he's tolerant of what's going on and then tries to benefit so that they work properly. You educate. People aren't doing things properly, you educate, you tolerate until you can get them on the right standard. But the point is, it's not that you tolerate and just let it go. It doesn't matter. No, it matters. Right? So that's the thing. So if it matters, I'm intolerant. And if I'm tolerant, it doesn't matter. No, it matters and I'm tolerant. So it's always a balance. Right? These are the qualities. Remember we were talking before, qualities are required? So most of the time people just want what are the technique But that's not actually the main point. That's not what makes the leaders. People talk about the qualities, the leadership qualities of a person. You know, you remember great personalities, great administrators, you know, in any country, in any history. It's the qualities of the person that you note, right? Whether they were good or bad. Does that make sense?
Maharaj, which countries or which regions are the closest to this standard nowadays, the balance?
That I don't spend enough time to actually be able to say something like that.
Because it seems that there are just two, that there are these radicals, liberal countries call them radical countries, and these radical countries call these liberal countries, and that's, and there's no, I don't know, is there any balanced countries?
Hard to say. Because probably if they're balanced, you won't hear about them. Okay. You know what I'm saying? You only hear about imbalanced countries. So which countries are not in the news? Check those out. Maybe those are the ones that are good. Okay. Like, you never hear about Monte Carlo or Luxembourg. Bhutan does very well.
Yeah.
The king runs the place. It's very strict. They follow their own culture and tradition. They have a limited amount of tourists can come in because they don't want to affect their tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. But at the same time, the people are very happy. Yeah, like that, so. Yes.
What is the, could say the main varna for mayor? Like I discussed just recently one mayor a few hours ago. He said that basically he's just doing the three things, you know, education, the public transportation, and medical, and then economy related to that. So is that like kind of a? He said, and besides of that, then sometimes something nice happens and he can be representative of the whole city, but he's just a servant. He said directly, he said he's just a servant of the whole city.
I mean, technically it's that in any case, the environment that it's functioning in is that of the government.
Yeah.
So in other words, there's that kshatriya flavor, kshatriya quality, kshatriya endeavors.
Yeah.
Whether the individual involved is a kshatriya or whether they're a shudra, that doesn't really matter. The point is that let's say if a shudra is assisting a king, it has to take on that quality. It's like a soldier. Just a regular foot soldier, they're shudras. You know, the foot soldiers, the cavalry, these kind of ones. The ones on chariots and elephants, those are kshatriyas. Right? So they go out with so many of these others. So then, but their mood, they have to be able to fight, they have to be fearless in battle and everything like kshatriyas, because they're functioning in that same capacity. So in the same way, if they're working in the bureaucratic elements or any of the civil service, it has to take on the mood that they're protecting the people. So making decisions, like you said, about the economics, the medical, the educational,
public transportation
has to be what's going to be the best for protecting the people, right? You know, like, does that make sense?
Mm.
So these aspects they have to see to. So what will make it better? Because then if you add it into that, then it should be the protection of the people, you know, so be there. Okay, police specifically directly deal with it, but still there's things that can be made to work out so things will be more, you know, it looks like a bus stop. Is it in a more safe place? Or put in more bus stops so people don't have to walk as far because of the place is dangerous or just it's too far to walk? Or, you know, the aesthetics of the place, the parks, the cleanliness, things like that. That also improves the consciousness. If the place is better maintained, it's more aesthetic, more nice, the consciousness of the people is better, therefore they will be able to follow the laws, and then the overall flavor of the city will be better. So they should also see to the parks and these kind of things. So if the idea is that, then they're functioning in that kshatriya capacity, whether they have that nature or whether they're just assisting that nature. So it doesn't really matter, because the rules are coming from the kshatriyas. Yeah. You know, just like, let's say, a temple president. The rules are coming from the kshatriya element as far as management goes. But it doesn't mean that they themselves necessarily have to be a Kshatriya to do it. Right? There may be a Brahmin Kshatriya, Vaishya, maybe, you know, just a nice devotee. Whatever it is, that they follow those rules, because it's a science. You follow the science, it works. You know, you establish something, you follow up on it, you delegate, you follow up on it. You know, you see what needs to be done. You know, you balance everything, don't spend more or less than you need, like this. And so that, whoever has the capacity to function in that environment can do that. But it doesn't necessarily mean they are a Kshatriya because they're doing it. We talk about it because we're talking about the Kshatriya duties. But we're not saying that all temple presidents are Kshatriyas.
Kshatriyas, yeah.
We're just saying that that's the duty that goes along with that position.
Right.
So they have to try to take on these qualities. But they, you know, the Varna itself, how they're approaching it, how they're working it, then that is individual. Right? I mean, there'll be those flavors though, but it's still. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. The other, if I can still. The ISKCON as a society lies on these three, seven, squeezed to trees, the Edu, the association, cooperation. So, how they are related? Like to the duties of the state, which part they form, like in that sense, how they are fitting to that picture.
It means these are the things we saw before. The Preetamar is supposed to see to the Krishna consciousness of the people. That's why you're running the state, so that they can be Krishna prosperous and Krishna conscious.
Yeah.
So, but what we're establishing, we're technically a Brahminical society. It's not that within the Brahminical society you don't have administration, so therefore that has those elements that you're doing administration that's done according to the flavors of the Kshatriya, you know, rules. Doesn't mean the temple president needs a crown and a sword and stuff like that. To, you know, person didn't get up in the morning, so off with his head. So, you know, how you say, after Darshan Artik, then we have the public execution. No, just as inspiration before Bhagavatam class, you take it seriously. So then the president says, yes, in this material world, death can come at any moment, so we should be serious about chanting our rounds and that, and everyone's going, okay, yeah, this guy's serious. You know? Now they're just hoping for the moon part, right? Yeah. So the whole thing is that if this isn't then what we're dealing with. We're a Brahminical society. These things are necessary for establishing Krishna consciousness. Then, so much is given in the books and all that, how you run administration, how you do all these things, so we can use them to our advantage within the context that we use them. Because you have a government that's just on a large scale, you know, running a yatra or a temple is on a smaller scale, running a family is on a smaller scale than that, you know, like that. So then but the principles are the same, it's just the detail will be different. So if you're going to describe administration, you describe it on the level of the king, because that covers everything and all detail to its greatest degree. Well, if we're talking, let's say, about charity, we talk about grihasthas, because they give the charity. Brahmacharyas, vanaprasthas, sannyasis may give, but not as much as the grihasthas will give. Or if we're talking about study, we'll talk about the brahmacharyas. Or if we're talking about, you know, the austerity in that, we'll talk about the vanaprasthas. We're talking about seeing things with a spiritual vision, we'll talk about the sannyasis. Does that make sense? Or in our education, we'll talk about the Brahmas. But it's not that everybody's not doing everything. It's just that where the focus is. Like that. So, because the focus is there, the facility is greater, therefore the example is more. So that's why in the Vedic system, it will give example for all eight of these positions from those positions. But the duties of them apply wherever they apply. You can have a brahmachari, if he's doing some management like that, the points of management apply, not that now he's a kshatriya, or now he's a grihastha because he's managing. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the, you know, or the, how you say, the grihastha is riding on the train from Calcutta to Delhi, you know, to go to Vrindavan, but because of the austerity, it's not that now he's a vanaprastha. So before they go on the train, they put on their yellow clothes and, you know, don't shave, don't cut their nails, you know, like that. When they get on the train and they build, you know, four fires around and stuff like that. And then when they get to Delhi, then they go out and they shave their head, cut their nails and have a party. You know, now they're grihasthas again. You know, and then they go to Vrindavan, they go to the, you know, MIHE, to the courses, so now they're brahmacharis, you know, so now they put on saffron, this and that, won't speak to the wife, won't speak to the husband, like that. And then when the class is over, then, you know, Haribol, have a party again. You know, so it's, that's not how, you know what I'm saying? So you apply the principles where it works, but you'll see the most greatest manifestation in this particular form. But administration as it applies, or management as it applies, wherever it is, will follow these rules. Is that so?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. Yes, excellent. Okay. Good. Good.
Can I just say a expression? Like, say there is a person in a temple community who creates a lot of trouble, and he's behaving like a snake, you can say, with a poison spreading. And there is an expression, don't trample upon a snake.
Yes.
But still, one has to deal with the different persons who create trouble. Like,
yeah, it means how much you can work around them, why not work? You know, if you see a snake, walk around. You know? Like that. But if you have to deal, then you deal. That's the whole thing. In other words, if something's asleep, don't wake it up. There's also a saying, let sleeping dogs lie. Because if a dog's asleep, he's making no trouble, he's not barking. As soon as he wakes up, the first thing he does, he's lying down. They have this method where they're just from lying to standing. You don't even see them getting up. And simultaneously they're barking. So that's why you don't wake dogs up. Is that something? So you do what you can, because the point is you also have other methods. You can deal with everybody else, because if they're dealing in a political way, you also have beta. Beta means this: you get everybody else understanding their proper way of dealing, the proper standard and all that, so then they won't appreciate the person who's always critical. And then if their power base is less, then you reduce their influence. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, one's active, but it's just one, you know, if one can deal with it, then great. I've seen many of these big managers, someone's making trouble, they just call the person directly in and talk to them directly. Why are you saying this? No, this and that. But so many things, and then they'll just go through until there's nothing left. So it's either shown that they're just making trouble because they like to make trouble, or they understand and try to, you know, at least make less trouble. So that makes sense. Yeah. Okay. So 58. Just as rainfall satisfies everyone's desires, Pritamaras used to satisfy everyone. He was like the sea in that no one could understand his depths. And he was like Meru, the king of hills, in the fixity of his purpose. Purport. Maharaj Prita used to distribute his mercy to suffering humanity. And it was just like rainfall after excessive heat. The ocean is wide and expansive, and it is very difficult to measure its length and breadth. Similarly, Pritamaras is so deep and grave that no one can fathom his purposes. Right, so that someone is doing something that the both in the way of the, because of the spiritual depth and everything, then he could be absorbed in, you know, what he's supposed to do, what he's going to do, and people may not fully understand what he's going to do, because much of the time in administration there's many things that you don't want people to know what's going on, because those who can make trouble and get in the way of Krishna consciousness shouldn't know until it's happened. Right, so those people that need to know something, that's how it works. The general rule is that who needs to know how something is functioning, they know. And then when it actually comes into effect, then everybody knows. Right? But now if everything is always done according to recommendation, according to scripture, therefore nothing wrong is ever done. Because the more people talking about it and that, the potency of its accomplishment is already taken away, right? In other words, when people talk about it, it's accomplished. So if everyone's talking about it, then it takes on the flavor that it's accomplished, even though it's not. Does that make sense? So that's just how something works. It doesn't make sense.
You did not get it.
Let us say you want to, you know, how you say, find a new temple in a particular, you know, area. It's a nice area, or whatever is the area you want it in. Now, the only people that should know about that are the people that are involved in arranging that. So the particular realtor you're dealing with, or the particular individuals that are dealing with it. Because then once you had it, you had it. Because otherwise, if not, if more people know about it, then somebody may complain. They don't want a Hare Krishna temple there. And this and that, and so then they'll block your ability to gain that. So that's the point. Otherwise, or so let's say, okay, the temple president is sitting down with the head cook, they're working out the Janmashtami menu. Okay? And unless there's some, you know, so they come up with a menu, and then there's some things that are special things, need some cook, so they call in those who can cook those, and we were thinking about this, would you be able to cook this for this many people, and this and that, you know, they remember, oh, last Sunday you cooked this preparation, it was really nice, but that was for 50 people, can you cook that for 500? You know, that, so they need to know, then they know, it works. But if it's just a general thing, you just, everyone just talks there and that, everyone's got an opinion about what should be the menu, and this and that, oh no, not that, you can't eat that, that's got, you know, sugar in it, that'll kill everybody, and that, oh, they can't put that because that's got chili in it, and that will kill everybody, you know, and this and that, and so what should we do? I think we should do, you know, spirulina with algae. That's something that would be good for everybody. Yeah. Like that. It says, but spirulina for algae, that will cost us $25,000. You know, you have to invest, you know, health, you know, needs an investment, you know, we can't. That's why you don't tell everybody. You know what I'm saying? It's not the ones hiding. You're telling those who need to know. Hiding means those who should know don't know. That's hiding. You know, like the kids stealing the cookies. You know, like that. But that's why we're saying, if you're working according to Shastra, you're not doing something that's not supposed to be done. It's within the duties, but only those who need to know that. That's why it said better to do your own duties rather than someone else's. Right? Because the other people, everybody has an opinion, but how many people have the skill and the quality to do it? Like when it comes to menus, everybody's got an opinion. But now of those 300 people with an opinion, how many can actually cook? And of those who can cook, how many of them can cook bulk? Right? So, actually, should 300 people have an opinion? In the modern context, no, everybody should be involved in everything. So why don't we get involved in everything? So, you know, like the previous verse, do all 300 people know that you're going to have sex with your wife on Saturday night to have a kid? Does everybody know, all 300 of them? Did you tell them? No. So then why we should discuss the menu? Right? In other words, the sex is your business, and the menu's, you know, that person's business. This idea is that, no, whatever I want to be involved in, I have the right to be involved. And whatever I say is my personal life, no one has the right to be involved. No one can tell me what to do. You know, how does that work? I'm a grihastha. I don't have to tell anybody. But you're an administrator. Everybody has to know. But administrator is one of the eight of the varna and ashram. So if, as a grihastha, no one can know, that's one station. Why is it this other station everybody should know? Oh, they're a public figure, as I said. But the point is if you're giving an opinion, that means then you're an authority. And if you're an authority, then everybody should know what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? And if you're not an authority, then why are you speaking? You know what I'm saying? That's the thing. That's what makes, a dharma. People don't do their own duty and want to poke their nose into everybody else's. And then we'll say, oh, this is not nice, this is not, because people can't handle the thunderbolt. And that's only because they only know how to give the thunderbolt, they can't take it. So the whole point is Prithu Maharaj can deliver the thunderbolt, but he can also take it. Does that make sense? I remember once one GBC man, someone came into the meeting yelling and screaming and making a whole scene. And so the chairman then said, you know, okay, here, sit down, stop screaming, what do you want? And then they kept on, then they went after him, you know, you this, you that. So the other GBC members just said, you know, they wanted to stop it. And then he made the point, no, I can dish it out, I can take it. You know, it means I can be that heavy also, and I do, but that I also, therefore, should be able to receive on that level. And so then he dealt with it until, you know, how much can they yell and scream? After a while, you run out of things to say. You have one thing to say, you say it 10 different ways, and generally after 10 different ways, you have nothing more to say. You say, no, it's not this. You know? So that's the whole thing, is that Preacher Mars is strong, but he can take that strength. And nowadays, people are weak, they can only be nasty, they can't be nice. You know, and they can't tolerate anybody else being strong. So that's the whole thing, is because if there's authority, then I'm not the absolute authority. What my mind feels, what I think, what I want, that's the authority. And if there's somebody else saying, dictating what should be done, then that means my mind's not the authority. If my mind's not the authority, then who am I? That's my specialness, you know, like this. Do you understand this? It's a psychological thing. So due to weakness of character, then they can't tolerate authority. Otherwise, someone with character can handle authority. So we're talking about as people with character. That's the Vedic system. You're trained in character. So those without character, then they prefer to work outside of the Vedic authority because that's the point. It's authority. It has something to say about everything in your life. You know, even go to the toilet when you're supposed to do it. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, like that. Is there any Christian doctrine on using the toilet? Does it even mention the toilet? Nothing. So the Vedas will talk about the toilet, you know, what, you know, which direction, how you're supposed to, you know, squatting, standing, this and that, using water, you know, so it gets into the whole detail. You know, washing afterwards, all this and that. There is nothing else. I remember this one gentleman, PhD, he ran his own school, everything, very, very successful guy. He used to, he was younger. He used to, actually, he was an IFS officer, which in India is the top of the civil servants. The IFS means the Indian Foreign Services. So he acted like as a minister to go and deal with other countries and everything like that. He used to interact with Nehru and, you know, he could walk right into his office and stuff like that. So then when he became a devotee and that, and then he's going along, he learns all the things. He was telling me one day, he was saying, this is the only religion that regulates that when you go to the toilet, then, you know, you have to take a bath. It was like, yeah. No other religion tells you now. So he was quite impressed. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, one has to know, yes, there is things, there is authority. But then that's the point, is we get upset with my obligations. What about my rights? But then, what about the obligations? So it's like, no, but he's doing this, you know, what about my rights? But what are your obligations in that? So I only talk about authorities of obligations and my rights. That's the only discussion. No one talks about the government's rights and my obligation. It just doesn't come up, amazingly.
At the same time, people in society are upset that there is no strong leaders that represent them. But it seems, from what you said, there's no reason to be. There's no strong leaders because of what you explained.
Because they don't want strong leaders. That's the whole thing. They don't want strong leaders. They say they want, but they don't.
But for instance, the leaders of the country. I can speak from, let's say, in my country, people are laughing about our presidents or prime ministers who can't represent the country. So, and they would love to, and they say, look at Estonians, or look at Lithuanians, yeah. So on the one hand, they would love to be represented by strong leaders.
They want to be represented means what I want in the way of sense gratification they're doing. But if the leader tells them that these particular aspects of sense gratification aren't actually correct, mm-hmm. that they don't want.
Yeah.
So the thing is if you want prosperity, you have to accept the path of prosperity that actually creates it. So piety creates a facility. So if you're not pious, how that will be? So you have to, that's what it says here, he has to fulfill their needs in sense gratification, but that means, what does that mean? They eat properly, they sleep properly, this and that. You don't have people on, how you say, Harley's driving around at midnight and yelling and screaming and throwing bottles around. So that's not allowed, you know? So these kind of things are there. People can sleep properly, but this whole thing is noble. We have the right to, you know, do this and, you know, yeah. You know what I'm saying? You know, freedom of speech, I can talk anything I want and this and that. Freedom of speech means you have something of value to say and you can talk about it. Freedom of speech doesn't mean you can just say any stupid thing. You know? Because that's the whole point, is that people just want what they want. But it's also, you have to want what is actually your right to want. You know, you can't write as something outside of that. You know, because an obligation is, a right is fulfilled by someone else's duty. Someone else's obligation fulfills your right, and your obligations fulfill their rights. So it has to be balanced. So, yes, they'll say they want, and let's see if someone's strong. As long as it's outside the country, then it's great. But if it creates any restriction on themselves, then immediately, you know, again, you don't represent them. So what is this mass of don't represent us? Who is this us? Right? Because if you look at the country and break it down into demographics, how much percentage of the population is that us that the person saying us is talking about? Right? I remember once seeing some demographic of the American voting bank, 9 different groups, and a lot of those groups would not be, how do you say, favorable to each other. They're opposing groups. Some are kind of neutral to each other, some, you know, hate each other, some may be allies with each other. But 9 different groups, and these were, you know, quite general. You know, your intellectuals, your housewives, your elderly, you know, the younger people educated, and then there was the young uneducated, and then there was all these different things. So when we say we, which we are we talking about? Because there's a good chance we're only talking about the we and the demographic they're from, not the we that's over on the other corner wearing all black and, you know, laced up boots. They don't mean that we, they mean, you know, whoever's saying we.
My point is, I see that my emphasis is on the fact that it seems that the inherent nature of any individual is somehow to be connected with equality. So, and...
Yes, yeah. But equality comes by seeing all living entities as part and parcel of the Lord. Yeah. Otherwise, there won't be equality. So only with the spiritual, that's where we started off with the whole spiritual thing, so that when we get into this discussion, we won't drop down into this whole knockdown, drag out, you know, political battle. Because people want authority, it's the nature, because that's how things work. We're small and the Supreme is big, like that. But at the same time, we want to be separate. That's the problem, is inherently the soul wants that happiness of being connected with the Lord. But at the same time, one wants to separately enjoy the facilities of the Lord without the Lord. So just the Lord, therefore, should just supply the facilities so I can enjoy. Right? That's a good God. You know? And, you know. You know what I'm saying? You know, like, good God, good God, bad God. Yeah, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's, God's just an order supplier. That's the prophet always talks about that. So they're not, looks like we're talking here, but being actual God conscious is that trying to fulfill God's desire and understanding how he's set it up, because it can run very smoothly and very nicely. There's times in history, you can always find points in history and different civilizations where things are going very well and very prosperous. And generally you'll see certain good qualities, certain good, you know, administration or policies or that in place, that it's running nicely because they're following those laws. You just never see one society doing all of them. And so that's the thing. So that's why in the Vedic, then you show one society that's doing all of them, one leader who's doing all of them. And then in that way we get the faith. So that's what we're trying to do. So that can be done when we do see everything in the Krishna conscious way. The more Krishna conscious we are, then the better we work. But the tendency is, as soon as we get into details, we forget the Krishna conscious, and then, you know, like that. Because the Krishna conscious element then is what actually makes the lower levels work. As we said, karma is an activity. Bhakti means you're doing an activity to please the Lord. You're engaging the senses in the Lord's service. So that means your karma and our sense gratification is already engaged. You're using knowledge in that service of the Lord. So that means all the knowledge here is used. You're already on the liberated platform, you're transcendental because it's a connection with the Lord. Therefore, liberation is already taken care of. Does that make sense? Yeah. And that devotion to the Lord then means you're getting the full taste and everything that you can gain from as a living entity in interaction and relationship, because you're dealing with relationship with the Supreme, everything in connection with the Supreme. So that's how you see everything is equal, because it's all connected to the Supreme. And that's the only way to see it equal. Otherwise, one may be able to see equal to some degree. You know, it's just like we can see, okay, everyone from our country is equal, but anybody who's an immigrant we can't see as equal. You know, or we'll only see immigrants from this area or that, or within our country, those who, you know, are upstanding, tax paying, law abiding, then there we see equally, but if they're not like that, we don't see it. You know, so there's always going to be something. Or this area of the world we see equally, another part we don't. So there's always going to be something. Even if everyone sees everybody so nice and wonderful, there's a good chance they wouldn't be able to do administration. You know, sit out in a field, skip around, you know, take some daisies, make them into a hairband and put it on, and play a panpipe, watch the butterflies, watch the sunset, you know, that they could do really well. But other than that, I don't know if I think I covered everything. I think that's it. I'll play a guitar, yeah. Like that, acoustic.
So is it that if my conclusion is that devotees shouldn't expect anything from that representatives of that leaders of that society, that devotees should be proactive and not, for, as you mentioned, for instance, invite counselors that teach us management or this or that, that we should be proactive, because there's nothing to gain from.
That means there's nothing to gain in the way of the generic. It means that, okay, let's say we have a skill we want to learn from a karma. But the point is he can't show you how to do that in Krishna consciousness. So therefore, if he teaches, he's going to use examples, he's going to do everything that's going to carry the flavor of his materialistic drive and why he's doing it. Say it's a manager, he's a good manager because of the materialistic drive. You manage, you get money, with that money you enjoy. You know? How do you tell someone's a good manager? Or how does he tell he's a good, you know, trainer in that? He's got material facility generally. Mm-hmm. He'll drive up in a Mercedes. He's doing this, he's invited to all the big parties, he wears a nice suit, he does all those kind of things, unless he's one of those, you know, casual down to earth, means he's got enough money, he can wear casual clothes and you're not going to get upset. Right? So he's going to carry that. So let's say, like you said, being proactive, someone who can relate to management or administrative principles and Krishna consciousness, then that individual then maybe could learn something from them. Either you practice and you work it out yourself, may take you longer. You could learn something from this person But you shouldn't get that person to teach a general class, because most of the people in that group won't be able to actually, they can't do what swans do. They won't be able to separate the milk from the water. And so then they'll end up being one of those. And the worst part is they won't even take the ability to organize things. They'll only take the ability to have a seminar on how to discuss what to do, so that they could go and hear that seminar, they could go give that seminar to someone else and take money. That's the only thing they learned how to do. But if it came to management, then, you know, they're in the, you know, how you say, with, how does it go? It's been a long time. Yeah, I don't know if this goes, wouldn't be able to get themselves out of a wet paper bag or something. I don't know, is that?
You talk your way out of the paper bag?
No, this is, you know how a paper bag can have a little bit of strength, but if it's wet, it just falls apart. But you're talking about the guy's such a bad manager, he wouldn't even be able to manage his way out of a wet paper bag. So that seems to be a, you know, a standard these days, is you're that bad of a manager. But you can talk management. I mean, oof, yeah, really good. Know all the words, all the lingo, the examples, you know, all the attitudes, the whole thing. You know, how to run the meeting to discuss it. But so, yes, means individuals could go and learn from them, and then that devotee could teach it to the others, because he's able to see how Krishna consciousness and that work together. But the others, because they won't be able to see either. They won't catch the Krishna consciousness, and they won't be able to apply it. So then they will get distracted from devotional service, and they can't even do that. So that's like, that's sad. You know, that's like the story of the, I think it was the Brahmin who was traveling somewhere, and he was so thirsty, and there was no place else around, so he went to this one Muslim's house and asked for water. And the guy came out and gave him, you know, brought water, but the only amount of water he had in his house was half a glass. You know, he didn't have any more water, that's all he had, so he offered that. So the Brahmin's lamenting that, I'm losing my caste, and I'm not even satisfied drinking the water. So it's one thing, it's okay, at least he, you know, how you say, he got, you know, he drank, you know, 5 glasses of water, and his thirst was satisfied, he lost his caste, at least he's that, but he gets nothing. So that's sad. You know, so it's lamentable. Yes.
In this age where people photograph their lunch and announce every detail.
That's how good the lunch is, but in general, yeah, that, I understand what you mean.
Yes, being exacerbated, of course, that tendency is there, fine, but exacerbated by Facebook, internet, etc. Are these platforms detrimental, or are they helpful to devotees' sadhu sangha and development?
How is it helpful? Means if you don't know how to enjoy your lunch, that the only happiness you get is taking a picture of it and showing your friends, then what benefit don't get?
But in terms of this,
you know, so it's one thing if it's like really, you know how to eat, your friends know how to eat, and here's some really fabulous stuff that you've been talking about, and now here you are in that little village out in that one place in France there, and here you have it on your plate, you take a picture. Then it may inspire the, the association. But otherwise, then, unless they know cooking or eating, then, you know, or it's something about, you know, is the picture, you know, Jagannath so merciful, he gave me some prasad, and here I have a pile of rice and, you know, one pakora or something, and that's what it's about, or?
If you had to decide between the two, the second would be more favorable?
No. What I'm saying is that do they really need to take a picture? That's my point. You know, unless the picture is going to be seen by those who can appreciate the culinary position of what they took a picture of. Does that make sense? So otherwise, how it's going to help in anybody's service or anybody's occupation or anything can't there. So what's happened is that it's just like one person was saying about the rich man has the fancy car, But not that that car gives him any particular pleasure or having the money gives him any pleasure. It's the pleasure he gets is when he pulls up someplace and everybody's impressed by it and thinks he must really be enjoying. He doesn't enjoy, but the idea that everybody else thinks he is, that's his pleasure. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's what we're talking about. So these pictures, you must really be enjoying. Wow, I wish we were there. Yeah, I wish we, and all this kind of stuff. So if it's something that it's amongst people who appreciate that association, appreciate the prasad, appreciate that service, then by a picture that may inspire them because they can see the quality of it and how well it's done, and they can see its connection to Krishna consciousness and engagement of things in Krishna consciousness, then it can be very good. So that's the thing. You have this internet kind of association that some people use it to great Krishna conscious advantage, discussing Krishna conscious things and pictures and narrations and that, and people are inspired in Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, you have a great volume that's just prajalpa and doesn't actually inspire anybody in Krishna consciousness. Especially when on your page you put all these nice things, and anybody who's a friend, their wall comes up on your wall, and then it's just like everybody's just the same. Then it's not like your presentation. So unless you arrange it that other people's stuff can't come onto your site, then how do you maintain a Krishna conscious flow? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If they want to make a comment or something, that's fine. But just because it's on their wall, it comes on yours. And what's on their wall? What they got from someone else, what they got from someone else. Does that make sense? So how is that? But amongst themselves, then if they're happy, then nice. But as far as Krishna consciousness, that's going to be how the individuals apply it. Mm-hmm. Right? Someone likes cooking and serving Vaishnavas and nice things, and then you send a picture of, this is what we're serving the Vaishnava, then others might be inspired, that they're putting in the effort, the quality of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was just that you happen to be out at some funny little place on your road trip, and you take a picture of your fries and salad, it's kind of like a hoobie. Yes.
I'd like to clarify a little bit of the previous discussion about the dharma and the results of it.
Dharma.
Dharma. And the results of it. There are people who do in a way that they perform their duties without actual knowledge, but they inherently do them properly. So could it be also that is the reason that they still prosper?
Yes, yes. It's just left over from previous. If we're just talking about people in general or things like that, it just means that in their previous life they had that habit of doing that particular dharmic activity appropriately. So when they die, that just comes through into this life. Now, whether they'll continue it depends upon their desire, their association. So they could continue and develop, or they could also go down. Because once they have facility, the tendency is, that's what we say, from dharma comes artha. You can continue doing dharma, then artha still comes. But the problem comes is when artha comes, then we get into sense gratification. And getting to sense gratification, they might get distracted. So that's why, unless sense gratification is regulated, when it's appropriate, at what times, in what situations, with who, how much, the volume, all these different things, then you can say it has some meaning. But otherwise, if it goes beyond that, then it's not, it's considered bad. Just like even in the modern, someone is doing, what do you call it, social drinking, or what is it, you go to the dinner and you just have, one glass of wine. You're just drinking to keep company, but you won't drink more than that. Right? So if they ask you, you'd say, no, that one's enough, oh, that's all, things like that. And it's, but you're being polite. But if people drink more, then they can't drive, there's accidents, there's so many problems, they don't deal properly, they go home and the family gets disturbed. they spend all their money on alcohol, you understand? So people say that's a problem, but they're not getting to the root of the problem, is why they're drinking alcohol. But it'll just be, but there's still the concept of restriction in the senses is still there. You know, you drive the car according to the rules, you don't go crazy and do donuts in the intersection, you know, like that, you know, so. Does that make sense? So the whole point is that you control your senses. So that's the way it is on everything. You know, the boys and girls flirt, but according to the thing, if the boy just, you know, the girl walks by, drags her into the bushes, then it'll be said, that's not right. So we, even though it's a society dedicated to sense gratification, they will still say, what's the standard restrictions? And then there'll always be some voice that is you know, challenging those standards, and then the standards just go down and down, and as they go down we see that the negative element or the criminal element becomes more and more, and then people are surprised. Why? Who's most surprised but the intellectuals? Right? The common person's not surprised that there's more crime and there's more other things. It's the intellectual, but it's the intellectual who broke down and challenged the authority of that tradition anyway, or that standard anyway. So there's this idea now, when we have free and everyone can do whatever they like, then they'll have this ideal society, as if everyone is as smart as that intellectual. Right? Because they have their limits, they won't go beyond it. But it happens to be their limits are beyond what they're attacking. But if someone attacked their position, that they're being too conservative and they're not liberal, they get very upset. They would say, oh, that's fanatic. So that's the whole point, is you're either too conservative or fanatic. So whatever position one's in, that's considered to be perfect. But then that's speculative, but it has to be according to what Krishna says is the standard. That's why then we go by Shastra. Sense, it's not about what you're doing, it's the mentality. So then how do you decide what to do? Because if you have no attachments, you have no attachment to do any particular work, right? So therefore, how do you decide what work to do? If you're liberated, how do you decide what work to do? What are the duties for your position? Well, therefore, Maharaj Prithu is liberated, but so what does he do? Because as a liberated person, he has no duties to perform. But since he wants to perform, he's a householder, therefore he performs, and a king, therefore he does those duties. So this idea is that, you know, we're above the rules, so we don't follow any rules. That's actually for people who are below the standard of human life. Those who are humans follow human culture. So it's either you follow human culture or you have 8 million, you know, options to follow non-human culture. So it gets very confusing. You know, if you have 8 million different opinions of how culture should run, how do you run the place? Right? Does that make sense? But if you have follow human culture, you have one. One. Therefore it's easy. Everybody can, so therefore 8 million people can be involved, or 8 billion people can be involved in one culture. But otherwise, you have 8 billion people following all different cultures, then how does it ever work out? Does that work? So the Dharma, if it's followed from previous, will come through to this life. But depending on association, that will continue or degrade. So that's why association is the most important. And even they're following, but the point is unless they follow in connection to Krishna consciousness, it will be lost at some point. So why not get eternal benefit for that piety that you have now, while you have it? Right? Does that make sense? And then at the end of this life, go back to Godhead and not worry about, you know, future lives and the pious position. Okay.
Yes. Maharaj, sir, could you explain what is the proper, should I say, place for the politicians in the Varnasram?
Politicians are assistants to the Kshatriyas. That's where they would be in the natural position. But nowadays, even the Kshatriyas want to get involved, they have to use politics. No, politics is just administration deals with politics. Because that all it is that you're nicely telling the other party what you want, and they're trying to tell you nicely what they want, and then you're trying to work something out. So you disagree with what they're saying, but you say it nicely so that it doesn't create a fight there, because you're trying, politics means you're trying to avoid war. Right? So you're dealing nicely. So that's conciliation. So you deal nicely, you talk nicely, you deal all the different things. But it's to come to gain results of your efforts without war. That's what politics are for. But if someone, all they do is they're a politician, in other words, they deal with all these political things, but that's all they do, they don't do other practical work, they're a politician. So because they only know how to do that, that's why they're, you have to be very careful with them. Because they're speaking on what's good for their position. So now if they're Krishna conscious, then their position is Krishna consciousness and trying to affect that, then there'll be some, you know, they could technically work, but they still have to deal in these diplomatic ways. But if they're only, if they're a politician only for themselves, then it's hard to trust them, because whatever's good for them is what they're going to do. So let's say they agree with what you're doing and now that, but when they go to apply themselves into it, they're only interested in your ideology because they can see the benefit they'll get from it. But then when they go and try to deal with the other party and find out, let's say the other party's got some certain strengths or they can offer certain things that may be better than what you're offering, they'll switch. That's why it says you can't trust them. Right? So only if someone's a devotee and only if someone's God conscious, then that element's come in. But it doesn't mean it's not going to be tricky. You're dealing with that. But technically it means, what do you mean by the politician? But it's supposed to be that they're working on behalf of the public to gain the benefits for the public based on what the scriptures say. So if you want to establish government by a diplomatic process, I'm not diplomatic, I mean a democratic process, that's fine. But the point is how the decisions are made, how the people are organized and run, has to be according to what's actually beneficial for them, as Shastra defines. Otherwise, if it's speculative, then the problem is as the modes of nature change, then people's values are going to change. You know, it's just like now it's, okay, liberal and this and that and how you dress, and people don't dress so well, right? And we're saying, oh, this is the modern thing. But if you go back 100 years, then you have the Victorian age. And, you know, everybody's, you know, dressed up to the neck, basically just their face sticks out, their hands stick out, nothing else sticks out, right? But before that, then it wasn't like that. You know, it's just like, you know, people would, before the Victorian age, anywhere in the Western culture, if you went swimming, naked. That was just the standard. So cultured people, if they went down to the beach or the creek, you take off your clothes, go in the water, take a bath or swim or play or whatever you do, and then you get out of the water, dry yourself off, put your clothes back on. So therefore, it wasn't seen as a point of sense gratification. It was just that you don't get your clothes wet, you know? And, you know, and then what do you do with the wet clothes? If you come down there like that, you come down you know, what do you do with all the wet clothes? You don't have to bother about that. So it's just practical. That's the way it's been in Western culture like forever. But with the Victorian age, then it wasn't allowed. And so now we're saying, oh, we're free and liberal, but we're not as free and liberal as it was before the Victorian age. We don't allow people to go around naked like that. You know, okay, in the sauna it's all right, but if you just go down to the beach and people are like that, you'll say, what's going on here? So as far as previous things, then we're not actually that liberal. So that's the whole point is, liberal is just kind of a state of mind of what you think is should be done, as opposed to, you know, an older style of thinking. But before, they didn't see that bathing was a thing of sense gratification. So therefore, men, women, kids, everybody just was down there and they just go in naked. You know, that was just standard. But it wasn't seen. But now they go down the beach and then, you know, it's all sense gratification, who looks good and who doesn't. So therefore, then you have to have some clothes on. But before, is that people were naked, it wasn't about sense gratification. It was just, that's what you do to swim. Right? You take a bath with no clothes on, so why wouldn't, if you're bathing in your tub, you take no clothes, so why not if you're bathing in a river, why, or a lake, or the ocean, why would it be any different? Because people just didn't equate being naked and bathing with sense gratification. I mean, does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Now they do, so therefore then you have to make some adjustments.
Yeah.
So, you know, all this talk about being liberal, they're not very liberal, you know. You know, the Romans were into orgies. That was just pretty standard, you know. So, but now they're, you know, it's considered a little bit on the side. That's the kind of stuff you don't talk about. You know? So it's like all these things that I think they're so liberal, they're so this, that. It's just the modes of nature, what today they say is stuff.
Makes sense. Still in the terms of upper court, lower court, where are they situated? Just
upper court, lower court.
Yeah.
They would generally be the those who are elected by the people are in the lower court.
Right.
So in other words, in the Vedic system, the democratic element was there. It was just there was the lower house. It was the lower court.
Yeah.
So each village then amongst what's there, then they had their representative. Amongst 10 villages, then they elected amongst them who was there.
Yeah.
No, in other words, the village and those things that were there, certain people are qualified because it had to be made up of a panchayat, had to be made up of a certain group of people. So you had to have representatives from all aspects of the village life.
Yeah.
So then from that, then you would choose who your people were. You know, there has to be, you know, a Brahmin like this, there has to be the farmer, the this, that. So all aspects of village life are recommended. Then from that, then they'll have a head, right? From that, then of that panchayat is the village head, who's responsible to take care of the needs of the village and organize that. Then of 10 village heads, the village heads will elect who's there.
Yeah.
And then of 10 of those, then there'll be 10 of those, however many, it depends how big the kingdom is, until it gets up to the lower house, right? And so that way then the lower house represents the whole kingdom, all the villages. So somebody can talk about what's going on in the region. It's prosperous, there's a drought, you know, this natural disaster happened, or this kind of crime is coming up. It could be then there. So then they then discuss, they present to the higher court, the higher house. Then having presented everything in that, then the higher house, then they, that higher court, they then make the decision and then make and what will be done. And then that will be then if it's to do with them and they have some part of it, it'll be informed to the lower house and then they'll do their parts. But, you know, just like, let's say, there's a drought in one area, the crops failed. So therefore there's a shortage of food. So then that will be brought up, you know, into the lower court. That will be presented to the higher court. They'll make a decision what to do. And so then how to get grains, how to get them distributed in that area, that will be worked out. So that would be the democratic process. So the democratic process is part of the Vedic. It's just not the top. It represents the people. But administration still makes the decisions. That's the difference. So it's thought that there is no democratic process in the Vedic. But it is there. But it's for... Basically, you say the democratic represents the Vaishyas and Shudras, right? So it means a major part of the kingdom, but that's where the representation is. But how to govern the place, that is put together by those who actually understand that. Because we'll see in the establishment of a new king, then we see with Uttanapada, then the process. And it's referred to in other places also, but that's where we see the detail. Is that Uttanapada, he was confident by the qualities and training that Dhruva Maharaj had that he could be the next king. Right? So that's the first thing. The king who has the responsibility is turning over the same responsibility to someone else. He should be satisfied that, yes, this person could do it. Right? According to his understanding and everything. Then, the next thing is then to those who are the senior men in the administration, in the higher court, and those involved on that level, then they should, it's brought before them, and then if they agree, yes, they also have seen from their angle, because, you know, the king may see only certain things, and other aspects won't be seen. So they all agree, then we know, okay, then the second part is there. Then the third is, you know, through their methods, they should find out what the people are into. So it's not that you hold a vote, It's that people go around, the spies go around to all the public places and where people hang out and all that. They know what places represent what kind of groups and this and that, and they'll bring up the topic. You know, stuff like that. I heard the old king is retiring, and they're thinking about Dhruva Maharaj being the replacement. And they'll somehow bring it up and see what the people's reaction. And so if the people say, yeah, that's great, Dhruva Maharaj is this and that, and Tanabha is a great king, and now he'll be followed by his son, will be great. Or if they say, hey, well, that's stupid. It should be Jose Manis, something like that. So then they know that it's not good. Then they know the public has a problem. So now, then if that's a problem, then they have to educate the people or show the people how he's good if they're confident he's good. Or they have to re-look at it and find out why don't they think he's good. Because that maybe in the palace he does all great things, but when he goes out of the palace, he's crazy. Like I remember, I think it was in Nepal, that the prince, he would go out with his fancy cars and run people over and start fights in nightclubs and everything like that. So the people didn't like him. So it's not like he hit somebody with a car and stopped and took care of the family. No, he just kept on going. He didn't care when it was brought up, and they just silenced the people. So then nobody likes him. So it has to be seen when the king likes, the seniors like, and then the citizens like, then you can say, okay, here's the proper king. So that's how you do it. So nowadays they do it through voting, but the whole point is it's not actually representing all three groups, it's only representing one group, which happens to be the maximum number of individuals, but it's not necessarily the most educated in what administration requires. Like that. So unless you educate all the people that they know what it takes to manage a country, and therefore based on that, then they vote. And then also when people are campaigning or trying to educate people about their platform, it's not about how bad the other guy is, but about their position, why they're doing and explain things actually on a proper way, then maybe you'd have a little bit better chance of getting a better quality of administrators.
In the law, it's more like a side of being experts in the varna, or like representatives of the, we could say, opinion group.
Means they would have to actually practically be able to do something, because even you're representing, you still have a village that you're managing. That's the difference, is that somehow the modern thing, as you go up, you don't have anybody under you except for the other in charges. Because we think it's, okay, these guys, choose a leader amongst themselves, but it's not that he gives up his village. Say you have the village head, but it's not that he doesn't do whatever duties he does in the village, right? Then when those ten village heads choose a village head, he still has his village that he manages.
Yeah.
Right, so even he's that, and then when that goes up to the next one, out of those 10, one, he still has his village. So all the guys that are sitting in the lower court, they still personally manage their villages. So their finger's still on the pulse. And the modern thing, you get disassociated with that, so then you're just a politician. You wouldn't have a clue what's going on the ground. You go out, shake hands, and kiss babies. Okay, great. But, if people's hands are rougher or smoother, and how strong a handshake they have, and whether kids' skin is still smooth or not, that's it. So I'm not sure if that's enough information to run a country. So that's the difficulty, is that it's artificial. It's like a centurion. Then in the Roman military, you had 10 men, and one person was the head. Then someone who's head of 10, that's a centurion, but he still had his 10 men. So it wasn't he just sat there and managed 100 people. He managed his 10 directly and gave advice to the other 9 who would manage the 90. Like that. So it's real. You're still in contact. So as you go up, then he still has, so you'll always have your...
Still goes like that.
Yeah, so that's why the military is practical. But in the political field, as you go up, you don't have anything you're doing.
Technically, one is leading always just from 7 to 10, although it could be thousands, the group.
Yeah.
It's just direct. is 7 to 10. It's 7 is up to 7, it's still getting a little mass. Meaning like, you know, it's not so personal anymore. Some capacity has up to 12.
Yeah, well, 12 is the maximum the Vedic recommends.
Yeah. Like so that's how the organization takes the numbers like that.
Also then, in advisors, 9, if it's managerial, and if it's Shastric, 5.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So there is limits on what you can deal with officially.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you do have those too. So the difficulty is if someone's only doing politics, there'll be a weakness because how strong the character is and this and that. If they have good character, nice. But so the higher up they are in the politics, the more you have to see to their character. And what kind of character? Like let's say they have character in that they'll deal properly with people and control their senses in that way, then they can deal with areas that deal with people, but they may be weak in economics. So if there's money things come up, that will be a weakness. So they don't deal in those areas. So you have to know where they deal. This idea is that they have to be perfect in everything. No, they have to be perfect in the area they deal. The prime minister, that has to be perfect in everything. Like that. But the ministers, they have their strengths, so they deal with, you know, those areas. Like let's say someone can deal properly with the local people, then they'll deal with the internal affairs. Someone can deal with the other foreign countries, then they'll deal with that. You know, so they deal wherever it is their strength. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, is the norm this like a modern day political system, there is this majority and opposition. So are they also part of this Vedic system? Not
really, no. Because the point is it's all about the state and all about the people. So it's not about the party. Right? And the party is the country. And so the different individuals may come up with their ideas and present them. But if someone presents a good idea and it's viable, everybody backs it. But in the modern political system, even though, let's say, one party brings up a very good policy, The other party will oppose it just because they're the opposition, even though their policy would be less good for the people and this other one over there. So it's not about the people. Even when we say it's about the people and the democracy, that's about the political party. So they're only worried about the people as much as they'll vote. That's all it is. They're voters. That's all. It's not that they're people that you really have to take care of. You may have individuals who do think like that, and then people are impressed with that, but the problem is will they be able to survive the association of most everybody is not. You know, yes.
Like now in the this like for example Finland, there are like 200 MPs, member parliaments, and then there is also PM with along his ministers. So the ministries they make up the new laws, everything that, but they still vote with the MPs. Of course they have majority, so no problem. But if the system was like the ministers, they decide along with PM, so is it more a Vedic system then?
It'd be more a Vedic, but it should be based on the needs and that presented by the MPs. In other words, the MPs represent the population. And so that should be considered. One is they should know that it's true, so they should have their own, in other words, the MPs are managing their own areas, but the Prime Minister and those ministers on there, those top ministers, should have methods that they can tell if that's actually going on. So they have people in all those areas so that they can monitor and see that that's really going on. So if that's what's going on and the MPs are saying that, therefore, you know, that will be taken as seriously. Then they decide how it's done, not that the MPs decide. But at the same time, it's got to be something since much of it will be carried out on a practical level, in the village level, by the MPs. They should understand it and be comfortable with it.
I just figured out the student councils in USD are more Vedic than the parliament of the country.
Yeah.
Because they have this, these advisors that from they were like democratic, and then they choose the executive board, like in many companies also.
Yeah.
So it's more Vedic.
Yeah, no, it's just there, and it works. You generally see once you go into, if you're going into an area that has to work, like business or the military, then they do it that way. They do it more like the Vedic. You know, who said politics has to work? doesn't work like that. The guy's gone in 4 or 5 years anyway. What does it matter? But, you know, you have a guy come in when he's wherever it is, 17, 18, 16, whatever is the age that you can come in. And then, you know, how you say, so many years later, then he's, you know, a big person either in the economic or military field. It's all the same continuity, the same training, the same, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't change. If the president changes, these positions don't change. But, does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Yes? Okay, so I'll answer. John, Rantarashima Bhagavatam.